Burnsville. The project need is, as the Senator has described it, cities in the southwest metro area are experiencing difficulties meeting their potable water needs while shouldering the responsibility of protecting the endangered natural resources of statewide significance and value in the area. There's the Savage Fen, the Black Dog Fen, and the Boiling Spring Eagle Creek. The next page, we've got the area calcareous fens and groundwater users. If you look at the your map, the Savage Fen is located west of 35W. The Black Dog Fen is just east of the 35W, north of 13. Our existing Burnsville well field is east of 35W on 13. The Kramer Quarry, if you haven't noticed that, it's as you drive north on 35 in Burnsville, it's right before you get to the river.
Okay.
North of 13.
Okay. Otherwise, somebody's going to
be. The Savage and Black Dog Fens, they exist because of it's a natural upwelling of groundwater through the calcareous limestone, and it creates an environment for rare and endangered plant species. Fens are regarded as some of the rarest type of wetland in the Midwest. And the Boiling Spring feeds into Eagle Creek, a cold water trout stream. As the water needs in the area grow, because of the growth in the development in the area and the people coming to the Twin Cities metro area, protecting these natural resources becomes more and more difficult. The DNR requires us to have no net change in the groundwater levels from the Jordan Prairie Duchesne Aquifer, which feeds the fens, and requires cities to develop pumping schemes and underutilization of existing wells.
Yeah.
A little more background information. The Edward Kramer and Sons quarry pumps an average of 10 million gallons a day out of the Prairie Duchesne Aquifer into the Minnesota River to support its quarrying operation. The city of Burnsville withdraws an average of 7 to 8 million gallons per day from local aquifers. The cities of Savage, Prior Lake, Shakopee, Egan, Apple Valley, Rosemount, and Lakeville also draw their water from that same aquifer. Our project partners have identified 4 million gallons per day of water that can be saved from the Kramer and Sons quarry, resulting in environmental improvements to the Black Dog and Savage Fens. Save that 4 million gallons a day from being pumped into the river. That could be diverted to a drinking water standards and used by the city of Burnsville and its municipal partners. 4 million gallons of additional water supply decreases the amount of water that Burnsville and its partners would otherwise pump from wells. That's equivalent to 2 or 3 additional wells from that aquifer. That decrease in well pumping will improve the fen's quality and increase flow in Eagle Creek. The next sheet shows that the fen level improvement by utilizing the water out of the quarry. We'll get an almost an 8.7 foot difference in the Black Dog Fen water level and about a half a foot difference in the Savage Fen level. The benefits to the quarry operation, due to the increasing dewatering volume, as the quarry excavation expands, the quarry is nearing the limits of its discharge permit. They have an appropriation permit, just like cities do, for the amount of water they can pump out of the ground. The 4 million gallons for drinking water, the quarry can continue to make high-quality, low-cost aggregate available to the private and government customers for the next 10 or more years. And as you know, the aggregate industry is facing a tough time in the next few years to supply the needed aggregate for the area. There are regional and statewide benefits. The statewide resources, these calcareous fens, the spring and trout stream are protected. Plus, the area communities are provided with an alternative water supply. By using the quarry water, we see an overall rise in the regional groundwater levels in the Jordan and Prairie Duchesne aquifers. Plus, we get high-quality, low-cost aggregate resources are preserved. What could be done if we don't have this alternative water source? We'd have to drill more wells. And additional wells in Burnsville have greater potential to affect the fens and the spring and trout streams. and the funds, if we drill wells, those funds spent on additional wells would not be available for future quarry water treatment plant improvements. Plus, the higher regional cost for aggregate will be the likely result. I'm on the funding page now. Right now, the summary of the funding is the cities are willing to spend $3 million in constructing this water treatment plant and pumping facility. Edward Kramer and Sons is willing to spend $3 million. We had previous legislative appropriation of $3 million last year, which we are greatly thankful for. We're requesting an additional $3 million to make the total about $12 million of funding. Just want to note, this project is not eligible for the Drinking Water Revolving Loan Fund. Due to the growing water demand in the region, Scott County and Dakota counties are growing very fast. The plant should be constructed as soon as possible to avoid potential water shortages and to avoid the loss of capital that cities would spend in building more wells. The cost estimate of the treatment plant is now between $13 and $14 million due to high-rising steel and concrete prices. The cities and Kramer and Sons will fund that shortfall. The long-term solution, the quarry is expected to cease operations in approximately 10 to 15 years. This plan is designed to function with both near-term, with the quarry pumping, and long-term. When the quarry is done mining, it will become a lake, about 320-acre lake, and we can continue to pump water out of that water body. The benefits to the fens and the spring and trout stream and regional aquifer levels will continue for the foreseeable future. This is a real partnership. It's a public-private partnership. City of Burnsville and its municipal partners contribute $3 million. Edward Kramer and Sons contributes $3 million. And the legislature provides $6 million for protection of rare natural resources. City of Burnsville would own and operate this treatment plant. So we request an additional $3 million in funds for this project. I would sure gladly try to answer any questions you might have about the project, and we, like I said, we respectfully request that additional $3 million, and we're very thankful for the past $3 million for the project.
Thank you. And Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, sir, I guess you call yourself Bud, that's what you said, right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Did you ask for $6 million last year and we gave you half of it? Is that why you're back for the other half this year?
That's, we're here.
Okay.
Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Belanger, you know, we've talked about this for several years that I've served in this legislative body. If we finally put an end to that constant hassle over the fins and the creek, and I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, but at least we're moving ahead the way I look at this, because it's very, everybody knows about fins, they know that all over, but and save that trout stream. So if we can find the $3 million, that will kind of put this to rest. Am I reading this right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vickerman, I'd like to call.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, I also have Dave Edmonds from Kramer around here.
Mr. Edmonds, how are you doing?
Hi, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
I could make a few brief comments. I just wanted to highlight a few of the things Bud said. I'm Dave Edmonds. I'm an executive vice president with Edward Kramer and Sons. We operate a mining operation in Burnsville. I think the keys from our point of view are it is a public-private partnership. We're well aware of the environmental effects on the Fen. We've been operating there since 1958. We've monitored all the discussions. And this is the first project that the DNR is aware of that actually brings a positive impact to the Fen. By taking the water that we're currently appropriating and treating it and putting it into the municipal water supply, the cities are able to reduce their pumping in the groundwater wells that have the highest impact on those Fens. So in Bud's presentation, which some of you have, it shows that there's actually a rebound at both Fens, significant at Black Dog and measurable at Savage. And I think that those of you that are aware of the Fen issue would recognize that that comes in very positive light to the DNR. And really it is, the essence of this is the DNR is managing those Fens at the expense of municipal water supply wells. Therefore, alternative sources are required. Those sources are more expensive. So the linkage here is that we'd ask the state to help fund that mandate from the DNR to protect the Fens by participating in this project and granting the additional $3 million. I think another key point, as Bud mentioned, the cost, this is our third year here, and the cost of the plant has gone up over those 3 years. We've value engineered the plant to try to take costs out. The net result is the plant will probably cost between $13 and $14 million. And the city and the company, the municipal partners, I should say, and the company stand ready to shoulder the additional costs above and beyond the $12 million if the state would be willing to provide that second appropriation so that there's a total of $6 million available from the state.
Representative Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Vickman, this is for the trout. It's all about the trout, so we appreciate your help. But seriously, the DNR has been working with the city of Burnsville for some time because that one well is right very close to the fen, and they're very concerned about it. And this is probably one of the more creative solutions to that you can find of any of these type of natural resource problems. And with how much Dakota County and Scott County are growing, this will really relieve a lot of pressure that would otherwise be put on those. And the city, they really stepped up to the plate, and Kramer and Sons, too, and provided a good local match. So the Dakota County and Scott County delegations have been strongly in support of this.
Okay. Senator Fredrickson.
No, Mr. Chairman, members, I had the good fortune to be able to go out with the Capital Investment Committee when we toured this quarry. I forget whether it was, I guess it was late last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really impressed, and as often happens when we go on tours, really got an education on something that I thought I knew a little bit about, because I've been driving by this quarry since I started attending the University of Minnesota in the 1950s. And I thought it was a small little quarry that you could see some equipment from Highway 13, I believe it is. And I was amazed when we were given a tour of the quarry, the scope and the size of it, and also the natural resources are there, how closely it comes to the river. We saw small lakes with eagles and ducks and beaver. It's a unique situation. I think there are three good reasons why we should very seriously consider this and give it a positive recommendation. And I'm going to tick off two or three of them. One of them doesn't even relate to what we've talked about here. I believe Bud talked a little bit about it, but in 10 or 15 years, that quarry is going to be quarried out, and the metropolitan area is going to be scrambling, looking for ways to get aggregate for various means of construction. So I think we should continue to have discussions with Kramer and Sons on how we're going to fill that gap. And the other reason it talked about is the short and long-term water supply. It just seems like we should take advantage of this unique and collaborative effort for both private and public benefit. And the third, of course, is the environmental advantages that have already been talked about, the fens and the development of a very large lake there that's going to have clean water in it. I think we should partner however we can with Kramer and Sons to see that is when it is quarried out, is a very usable space and an environmental enhancement to the area.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, those ducks and eagles are fine, but Dave Edmonds has to go track those beavers.
You remember our driver that day?
Yeah.
It was interesting. Up and down the quarry.
If I might, two quick comments. The lake will be 360 acres when we're done, and we have a plan unit development with the city of Burnsville. We're already developing the ideas on a municipal park, access roads around the lake, mixed-use development on the east, and some industrial uses on the west, which we hope will include a rail transload facility that will allow aggregate to be imported to that location for the foreseeable future from a source outside of the metro area.
Okay. Thank you, and we'll look at this for possible inclusion into the...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next
thank you
committee.
Very much. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Belanger. Okay. Senator Berglund and Representative Clark. House file 0743, Senate file 0770. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Chairman Sams and Chairman Gunther. This request is for $3.5 million state funding for a cultural center to be located in the East Phillips neighborhood of Minneapolis. this is a unique neighborhood in that it has very large numbers of people of color that live in that neighborhood. There are over 2,000 Native Americans, over 5,000 blacks, including many recent African immigrants, and over 4,000 Latinos. It also is an area where the number of children per block is very high, and there also is a large concentration of elders living near that park. So I am going to just tell you that we are very much in need of an indoor space there with a presence of staffing. After-school programming, including after-school tutoring, is paramount. It's very important that this space have supervision so that criminal element is not taking over that space. And it is the highest priority for this community. I'd like to just turn it over to Representative Clark for a few minutes, and then we have a number of community members that want to speak, as well as the Park Board staff and commissioners.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Sams. I wanted to say thank you for hearing this bill. This particular bill and this effort has been in process for more than 10 years. And the community have met and talked about the need, and you just need to know, some of you have been out to this area in Phillips neighborhood in South Minneapolis. This is the one of only two park areas in the whole city that does not have a structure of the kind that we're seeking here, that has no place for children to go in the rain. There's no programming or full-time staff. And so we really need the help of this committee to move this forward. And we know that it'll be a place that'll bring together a community that's very diverse and very needy. I think the figure is that within about the six-block area there are 3,000 children who need to use that park. And so I'm going to turn it over to the folks who know this best, the folks from our community. I'll let them introduce themselves as they come forward.
Welcome to the community and name, please, for the record.
My name is Kerry Plowman. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota American Indian Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, Chairman, for hearing my comments and members of the committee. I represent the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, which is a coalition of over 30 Indian organizations with a 20-year history of grassroots work in Minneapolis. They asked me to facilitate our relationship with the other community groups in Phillips in an effort to combine our work and achieve a building and a need for our youth in Phillips Park. I wanted to cite very quickly a recent study by Embrace Open Space, which is a coalition of organizations such notable as the McKnight Foundation and the Metropolitan Council. The Chamber took this a very strategic approach that investing in this type of open space, which is owned by everyone of all the ethnic communities in Phillips, would increase the economic development in the area, reduce crime, and increase the property values as cited in that study. We felt as the Indian community that our efforts to work together and in collaboration with the others in the community could increase the ability of Phillips Park to act as a catalyst for the Phillips neighborhood. And I will turn it over to the other members in the community. Let them speak. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Shazak Cordian. I'm a member of the Latino community, and I live in East Phillips. I'm just going to give you a broad information of what's going on, and I don't want to get into deep into it. But basically, what our community wants is a recreation center where all youth ethnicities can, come in and learn from each other's cultures and stuff, because what's happening in schools is the students go and they find themselves in isolated cultures. They just focus on their cultures. They don't know about other people's cultures, and that's what the feuds begin with every culture. The gangs and everything, and they have a lack of knowledge. And what we want is a good center where everybody can learn from each other and stuff. And it's not like school. Like, they think school is like a recreational center, because some schools don't enforce the knowledge of other people's cultures and stuff. And I just hope there'll be some kind of a community like this, you know, with everybody together. So.
Thank you. Let me see. I don't think I can reach. I'm going to switch chairs. Hi, my name is Carol Pass, and I'm the president of the East Village Improvement Coalition. And we've been thinking about this, dreaming about this, having community meetings with regard to this for some time, for ages. And it's fired up again because our community organization is now meeting in a local landlord's efficiency apartment. We have no meeting space. Our meeting spaces are packed. We have no space for our seniors, no space for our kids, no space for our young adults. We can't do programs. We know we could raise the money for programs. We have no place to put them. We have the majority of new immigrants who are rebuilding our city and rebuilding Lake Street, and they're a wonderful adaption to the community, and we just don't have any place to really serve them. We are their first, many people, this is their first chance at democracy. We run a really good community organization where we do a lot of parliamentary procedure and everything else, but we have no place to meet. This is serious, and because it got so serious this last year, as we tried to really do this, we really fired up our interest again in pushing for a community center. I think it was Carrie mentioned that there were 3,000 kids here that do not have a community center. There's not 3,000 children in Phillips. There's many more. But this area, this group, right around, clustered around this park, has no access to any programs or anything because we can't provide them, primarily because we don't have a place. We believe we can raise money with our demographics and et cetera, but there's no incentive to do this because there's no place to put them. And I have to say some sort of scolding remarks, because all the other parks in places where there's fewer children, less fragile families, almost no immigrants, almost no refugees, not the diversity that we have. They all are doing things like putting in air conditioning, recarpeting, enhancing their beautiful buildings, and we're sitting in one of the most overused parks in the city with nothing. Our kids are playing in alleys, they are dodging bullets because of the amount of crime, and somebody pointed out to me that the Bondin bill has the highest amount of money goes for education, the next highest looks like it's for, I just may be wrong because someone just told me this, but the second highest is a corrections facility, and I'm saying we need to get these kids into interesting things. They are bored, and they do wonderful graffiti because they are so bored, and stealing cars can be a lot of fun. I used to steal strawberries when I was little, and it was very exciting. And we need to have something exciting all winter, all summer, all in the evenings. And we are desperate for you guys to produce this. We will work like dogs to fund the rest of it and build the programs, but we really need to serve our new people and our low-income people and our multicultural people. I mean, we owe it to these people. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Who's next?
I believe I am. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Bill Carter. I work for the City of Minneapolis as its American Indian Community Advocate. And I'm here in support of this measure before you. I'm hoping that you take it seriously, and I guess if I were in your shoes, I would wonder why I should care. I think both Senator Berglund and Representative Clark were very thorough at the very beginning here in describing what amounts to a distressed community surrounding that park, particularly Little Earth. I've worked for them closely even before I joined the city, and there are so many kids there, 400 to 500 youth under age 18. And there are many elements among them that are not real, not the kind of people that you especially want with you in a dark alley. At times, and there are elements that are not living there. That's what I'm describing. I'm hoping that you understand that Little Earth has its problem, and I keep focusing on it for you because they really simply do not have any structured youth activities, and I think anyone here would agree that structured youth activities are what bring the crime rates among these youth down. I see that courtesy of the Police Activities League, formerly Athletic League, that work closely with a lot of these kids. And that park, sadly, has, if you follow the dollars over time, has not received a lot of significant funding. It has received a tot lot. There's a small building that's staffed on a part-time basis. But if you follow the dollars courtesy of the park board, I think what you'll find in a longitudinal sense, it doesn't receive significant funding. And I would submit to you that until we start to connect these dots with respect to demographic projections, everyone knows there's a lot of brown people on their way here. They're not here yet, but they are. Many are here, and there are more coming. And if we don't recognize those demographic projections with respect to sustainable green space like this and really create structured activities for these youth, I don't want to preach to the choir here, but I mean, I think we have to connect those dots, and I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Morning, Mr. Gunther and Mr. Sams and the rest of the committee. My name is Dr. Lee Antel. I'm the president of the American Indian OIC, located at the corner of Cedar and Franklin in Minneapolis, one block north of East Phillips Park and two blocks north of the Little Earth American Indian Housing Project. We are located in the new transit corridor, and there's a great deal of development that's taking place around the Franklin Avenue station. I can walk right off our parking lot onto the Franklin Avenue station. Immediately south is this park. And we have, as you've heard before, hundreds and hundreds of children that do not have healthy, supervised recreation and activities in their leisure time. We wonder often, what can we do about the gangs? What can we do about the problems that we see? Everybody's horrified when you read about a gang killing in the city. But what is it that we can do? The one thing that we can do is catch these kids at an earlier age and let them have, as all other parts of the city do, healthy recreation and a facility that these programs can be conducted in. There will be a great deal of development, economic development around this corner, and I think it should be complemented by the parks. People in Little Earth will tell you, our children are afraid to go outside and play. They can't take their bicycles outside and play. They can't leave their bicycles outside the house for fear something will happen to them. We need to expose these kids at a younger age to adult supervision, and this is one way that we can do it. As you can see, the park is supported by a wide range of ethnic groups from all parts of the neighborhood, American Indian, Somali, Hispanic, African American, Caucasian, and so forth. We all have this need together, and I think we've come together in a very good collaboration in order to make this happen. So I would very much encourage the committee's support of this request for East Phillips Park. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Judd Rekirk. I'm with Minneapolis Park Board. I'm the Director of Park Planning. I think you've been hearing the need that the community is expressing. I thought that perhaps my best fit for this would be to tell you where we've been and what we've been accomplishing out there already. To date, the Park Board has spent roughly $500,000 on new park equipment and playground equipment in this park. We've improved the wading pool. We've put in spray features, upgraded the ball fields, new picnic tables, benches, mostly the kinds of things that the community can access on their own. It's not structured in that sense. We've also invested in Cedar Field, which is a field about two blocks south of this. We've completed that last year, another field with an opportunity for outdoor activity. We haven't invested heavily due to the significant infrastructure costs, capital costs, in a building. The community has asked for this building. We started working on this project in about 1997, had community meetings with the community, design charrettes. We've hired consultants and sketched out options for layouts in the whole park, analyzed the size of the building that we would need, and made those kinds of analyses, but we've been unable to fund the capital for this project. Project is an excellent location in the community. It has the access to the Hiawatha Light Rail Corridor, has freeway access. It has barriers in the sense that those are barriers to the community, but they're also opportunities to the community. There's been a significant amount of development in this area and improvement. The community has made that point, and I'll hold off on that. But there is a need, and the Park Board is interested in working with this community and partnering with them. We have the available site. We just don't have the resources at this time.
Thank you.
My name is Mary Merrill Anderson. I'm Park Commissioner at Large with the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before your committee. The Park Board is extremely committed to this particular venture. We know that in this community, the need for structured recreation program led by qualified adults is absolutely critical. There are a third of the people that live here who are children. They are impacted by all kinds of issues, as you've heard. But we also know that in this place where there are all of these cultures present, that in our state, which is increasingly becoming diverse, we're having difficulty getting along and figuring out how all of these diverse cultures work together. In a place like a park where we can share the space, it's shared public space, we began to, number one, develop those ethics of what it means to be an American that builds on the strength of all the cultures that reside in that community, that learns how to play together, and yet learns how to work out the problems that exist in the community together. So we think this is a great opportunity to demonstrate to the rest of the state how we take a very multicultural community and build on that community to build the values of a shared American ethic. And so with the Park Board, we believe that we can provide the kind of leadership with the in partnership with the community to do the job here at East Hills. We've been working for a very long time with that community. It is a desperate need, and we would hope that you would hear and really think about funding this project. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. My name is Gary Schiff, Minneapolis City Council member. Just want to thank you for the opportunity to address you this morning. And a lot of what I do on a day-by-day basis is dealing with public safety issues in my district. The district with the highest poverty ratios in South Minneapolis, district with the highest American Indian urban populations in the United States. And so much of what the Minneapolis Police Department and the State Gang Task Force deal with every day can be prevented. And the connection between investment in our youth and with gang prevention is very real. And we have an opportunity today to move forward a great investment in our youth. The religious sector has stepped forward with communities of faith. Just across the street is Holy Rosary Church, where Mike Dale runs a terrific program reaching out to youth who are thinking about joining the Sereños, thinking about joining the Batos Locos. And this park is so critically located with an opportunity for youth to have structured activity rather than joining gangs. So I ask for your support to really augment all the great work that's being done by the city, the work that's been done by MHFA in reinvesting in Little Earth and the quality of housing in this area, and the opportunity that we have to give kids structured activities that will be leveraged with hundreds of hours of volunteers through volunteer captains, volunteer coaches, and through all the volunteer energy that you see behind me in my community that are so critically focused on reclaiming Phillips to be the proud community that we know it can be. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in closing, I'd like to say that in addition to the structured athletic activities that would be available for the youth, the after-school tutoring, there also is an organization that is committed to coming into this building to provide teenage employment in the community. These are all very positive things that are needed. This $3.5 million for this building will make it happen. We're happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions from the committee? I know the Senate bonding committee members were there, I think, and that was very, very good. Process. I don't know if the House was there or not, but.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Park.
I'm just passing around a document from the East Phillips Improvement Coalition, and one of the things that it does point out is that this neighborhood has put in neighborhood revitalization program money into this park, so just adding to the, I think, clear fact that the people who live there have been investing, and we just need some help from the state to help bring it to fruition. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Now, thanks for your presentation, and we'll sure look at this for possible inclusion in the bonding bill.
So, thank you very much.
Thank you. I know you've got some strong offers there. So. Okay. Okay. Representative Pulaski, yeah, I know that Senator Curlin is not able to be here today, but he's here in spirit. So that'd be House File 0281 and Senate File XXX. So.
Thank you, Senator, and members of the committee. House File 281 is a bill that the House Committee considered last session dealing with the Winona Shakespeare Festival, which is now at Winona State University. I have the director of the festival and the city manager here, and I think just to facilitate time, we greatly appreciate you moving us forward. Both of these gentlemen have to be back in Winona soon,
as soon as possible,
for another meeting that does require city financing. So I think I'll turn it over to them and let them explain where we are.
Welcome to the committee and name your and your name for the record, please.
Thank you for inviting us here today. I have some materials I'd like to pass around, and Eric, if you wouldn't mind just passing these out to committee members. My name is Mark Houck, and I am the producing director of the Great River Shakespeare Festival. The festival is entering its third season this summer. I think when we started in June of 2004, we had no idea what we were getting going. Last year, we saw 21% growth in attendance. We went from roughly 6,000 people attending the festival to 7,324 on the main stage, plus an additional almost 1,800 people attending other festival events for 9,000 people total in 5 weeks. The festival is more than just two plays run in repertory. There is a full education program. We have 2 weeks of teachers' workshops that we offer. We do outreach across the region. We have newspapers that come from Chicago, Milwaukee, Des Moines, the Twin Cities to cover the festival and to review us for our opening weekend. There's also a full concert series that takes place at Winona State University. There's an apprentice program that students come from around the country to participate in. They actually pay to be there, and we work them to death for about 12 weeks. And they take classes in the morning, work in the shops either in the afternoon or evening, and understudy on the main stage. And then there's also a full internship program. The internship and apprenticeship program alone has 30 people involved in them. The festival has become a centerpiece of an economic effort in Winona to recast itself and reframe itself as a 21st century university town. And we work very closely with the manufacturing sector, with both universities, and with the hospital to make sure that Winona is presented as a place that is attractive to the professional people that are needed to manage the manufacturing base in Winona, to staff the hospital, and to teach at the three universities that Winona hosts. And I think that that's actually our primary reason for being here today, is that we are going to need a long-term facility for the festival that would be a year-round use facility. When we're not using it, the plan is to build the type of facility that could become a conference center, that it could be used by both universities and by other major employers in the area. Last year, University of Wisconsin-Stout conducted a study for the Winona Chamber of Commerce, where they took a look at the possibility of a mid-sized conference facility in Winona and discovered that, in fact, there's quite a demand. The type of facility we're looking at would fit in perfectly in relationship to the facilities in Rochester and La Crosse. It's a different market and a different size in a very unique community. The festival would be its primary tenant, and we would work with other agencies to put together an economic and operational plan that would allow the festival facility to be used year-round. And that's what we're asking for money to do, is to study the feasibility and the economic impact of this kind of facility, to do some site selection and do some preliminary planning so that we can do this right and have a good plan in place before we begin. And I'm open to any questions that you might have, or Eric, if you'd like to say a few words.
Welcome, Eddie.
Thank you. senators and representatives. On behalf of the city, our mayor and council, I simply would offer the comment that we have put our money, I think, where our mouth and our interest is at. The city of Winona itself is giving the festival $90,000 a year, and we see the potential of what the festival has done in spurring on other endeavors in that whole new thought process of economic development in communities. And we're finding our niche, and we believe it's a benefit not only to the city of Winona, but to the region and certainly the state of Minnesota. And we're at a point where a thorough planning process to go to the next step is needed, and we appreciate your support.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee at all, Mr. Chairman? Senator Frederick.
I was wondering if one of the three of you could talk a little bit more about the proposed location, where it would be located at.
Yes. One of the things we need to look at is where it would be located. We know that we would like to be someplace between Winona State University and the river in the downtown region. We don't know exactly where that would be. Obviously, this is a Port Authority city, and we don't want to take away from any manufacturing or other uses along the riverfront. So that part of this money is to look at what is the best possible siting for this facility.
Mr. Chairman, one further question. Is there a chance, is there an opportunity to locate it on the university campus?
I don't believe so at this point. I think that they have their master plan, although we work very closely. In fact, both Dr. Romali and Brother Craig Franz from St. Mary's sit on the Shakespeare Festival board, so we work very closely with both the public and private university, but at this point there's been no discussion of it being on campus.
Mr. Chair, Senator, Winona State University is the smallest campus in the Minscu system by pupil square footage. Any expansion in Winona would take blocks of either homes or commercial property. So it's extremely difficult. Now, what Winona State is trying to do now, frankly, is to get either enough parking in place on that campus and enough building in place, both residential halls or academic facilities. It would be next to impossible to house a facility of this size on that campus.
Okay. Any further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Ranum. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, fellow senators and representatives. Representative Dan Larson, who is not able to be with us today, and Representative Thiessen and I are the legislators who represent the community of Richfield. Back in 1996, many of you are well aware that the legislature at that time decided to make the decision that the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport should stay at its current site, and that any expansion should occur there as opposed to building a new airport at another site. The ramifications for that were great with regard to the communities that immediately surround that airport, with Richfield being one that that with the expansion of the new runway is as close as you can get to a runway as possible. The proposals, we have two bonding requests. We believe that these are requests that are very important for the state in two ways. First of all, they would keep a commitment to making sure that the communities that surround the airport maintain the quality of life that they have, things that were given up when the state decision was made to expand at the current site. At this time, I would turn it over to Representative Thiessen, who is one of the state legislators from Richfield. He'll briefly describe the two bonding proposals, and then we will turn it over to the staff, who will explain why these two proposals, we believe, should be, they are of regional significance, and they should be considered for inclusion in the bonding bill this year.
Thank you. Representative, nice
thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Briefly, the two proposals are this. The first is a request for money to assist the city of Richfield, which is putting up a substantial amount of its own money to do this as well, to create a parkway in the area affected by the airport. A little bit of background, and they'll give you a little bit more. Because of the new runway and the noise impacts of that runway, the city of Richfield has a plan to redevelop some of its east side along Cedar Avenue. And as a result of, as part of that, they need to reorient some of the traffic that goes through that area, because the redevelopment will have very different traffic patterns. So part of it relates to airport noise and the redevelopment caused by that. In addition, because of the new facilities at the airport related to Federal Express and some of the other companies for, not for passenger traffic, but for cargo traffic, Cedar Avenue itself has undergone significant changes, and the city has put up $5 million of its own money to renovate some of the roads in the vicinity of Cedar Avenue and the intersection with 66th Street because of that, and this ties in with that project as well. So the city is actually putting up substantial amounts of money to address what really is new conditions created by state and regional decisions. I would also add that Hennepin County, the Metropolitan Airports Commission, the state of Minnesota, and the city have all put money into this area. So there, that is kind of the regional connection and the regional importance. And I'll let the city address a few more of those details. The other has to do with some ball fields that I used to play on as a kid. They were kind of the state-of-the-art ball fields back, forgetting too long ago now, I suppose. But they are now sitting underneath the dirt and underneath the new runway at the airport. And as part of that construction, this request would be for some money from the state to kind of replace some of those 13 ball fields that were destroyed and put under the ground when the new airport runway was and the airport was expanded. I'll turn it over now to Steve Devich and some of the folks from the city to briefly describe in more detail. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I have two staff members with me who are going to make very brief presentations on the two projects. I will just add before we start that I was part of Richfield staff and have been for about the past 26 years, but in 1998 we were here at the legislature asking for help to replace those valuable ball fields, 13 ball fields that we lost due to airport construction. At that time we'd asked for $3 million to help us with reconstruction of those fields. The state was gracious enough to give us $2 million of that money, and we're back here asking for that last part of it, about $550,000, to help us to complete the last of the fields that we need to replace. But with that, I'm going to first ask Tom Foley, our transportation engineer, to talk about the 17th Avenue Parkway, what that project is, why it has regional significance, and a little more detail about it.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. As a transportation engineer, I want to just very briefly explain our project. Here is the airport, Minneapolis, just to the north, East Richmond, which is predominantly residential, facing a lot of aircraft noise from the airport, and especially the new runway. The city has proposed extending 17th Avenue as our new north-south arterial street on the east side of Richfield. It's being done basically because our old arterial, Cedar Avenue, was cut off by the new interchange for the airport improvement. Without that connection here, we've been forced to move the north-south intersection to the west. The city is proposing to contribute $5 million to improve that intersection, but we would like to extend it up to connect to the Bloomington Avenue Bridge that would connect to Minneapolis. So the first thing is replacing the frontage road that was lost at the airport. The next is removing traffic that current lane or would possibly use our Bloomington Avenue, which is in the heart of our residential area. So we would take that traffic that was formerly on Cedar and put it on a new 17th Avenue. We believe that the improvement that we're calling for is part of the airport noise mitigation plan, which created the new north-south runway. We also believe that we'll be putting in commercial development to the east of this new road, which also serves as a buffer for our residential area, lessening the noise impact on remaining homes. Creates also a bike and pedestrian pathway that will be able to enable the city to connect to Minneapolis, Bloomington, and there is a major park in the city, a Taft Park. That would be a great attraction for people who are either walking or biking. And finally, promoting future transit access from Minneapolis all the way down to the Mall of America. So those are the major features of this project.
The second project, of course, is the ball field replacement. Again, we lost 13 ball fields. We replaced a number of them, but we still have a few more left to go. And I'll ask Jim Topishofer, who is the Recreation Services Director at Richfield, to make that presentation.
Welcome to the committee.
Your name.
And your name. Your name for the record, please.
My name is Jim Topishofer. I'm the Recreation Director for the City of Richfield. The area to the east of this blue line, Cedar Avenue, you see the new runway. And at one time, about 10 years ago, there were 13 ball fields there. Richfield neighborhood with two neighborhood parks. Some additional recreational amenities. There was a community garden that we had there that served the community as well as an archery range. And then a nice golf course. And, of course, that was all lost to the expansion of the airport. And, you know, that was a pretty significant chunk of the recreational assets that the city had at the time. And to solve that issue, we came to the state in 1998 and asked for some help to relocate those ball fields. And we're very appreciative to receive $2 million. We originally requested $3 million to perform a plan or to complete a plan that a group of citizens spent a lot of time with back in those years. And what we did was we renovated existing facilities to include those 13 fields. With the bonding request in 1998, we received $2 million, but that did not complete the plan. That was only a partial completion. And so now we're trying to play catch-up to where we were back in 1998 and complete four additional fields. Those fields would be in the center part of town in Lincoln Park, and they would help to transform that facility into a multi-use facility that serves both girls and boys. We're under some pressures to make sure that we're providing equitable facilities, and so that plays into the mix. Another thing right now that's making this more urgent for us is this school district has recently sold one of their schools, which had two fields on it. So it's even more of an issue for us now, and we're requesting help to make our plan complete.
Representative Gazelka, one question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the panel, when the land was given up for the runways, you got $2 million for the ballparks, but did you get any financial reimbursement for the land that was given up?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we didn't get money for the land. There was leased land that we had. The ballparks were on leased land from the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Many years prior to that, of course, that all was part of Richfield many years ago. Thank
Mr. Chair, thank you, representatives and senators, for listening to the presentation. Just in conclusion, as we know, the airport is a state benefit. I think people believe that. The challenge is, especially as that north-south runway has now gone into operations, more people are beginning to understand the quality of life issues that often are challenges to communities as they get some of the noise. And so, as you can tell from the city of Richfield that we represent and these folks work in, this community has really borne the brunt. It seems only fair that the state would remember that it was its actions and its decisions that brought these challenges to this community. So we hope you will take that into consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you. And I know Representative Larson wanted to be here and supports your project too. So thanks so much for coming. Senator Vickerman, I think, and Representative Magnus has some people from long ways away. And Lewis and Clark, we're back again. Welcome to the committee.
Chairman Sams and Chairman Gunther and members of the committee, I want to just thank you for letting us bring this project before you. It's been here before. It's a Lewis and Clark water project. You follow the water system down in southwestern Minnesota. There are no aquifers, and we struggle to get any business even come in there to that takes water. In fact, we have to turn them down because we don't have the water. We tried to get money and still try to get money from the federal government, and you know, the budget cuts, we didn't get probably half of what we thought we were going to get, but we don't want the project to stop. We want to move it on. And so, Mr. Chairman and members, we're asking for $3,282,000 so this project would keep on. It's a multi-state project, Mr. Chairman. And so we have Mr. Senator Representative Magnus is here to add a few words, and then we have the expert, Red Arndt, can go through more of the details.
Thank you, Senator Vickerman, and thank you, Chairman Gunther.
Welcome
to the committee members. In fact, some of you, this is your home area, Representative Bradley. Your home area is part of this. Representative Clark's been in and out of the room this morning. Her home area is part of this, part of the area that this Lewis and Clark Rural Water Project will encompass. Senator Vickerman talked about the importance of economic development in southwest Minnesota. And the Lewis and Clark Water Project would ensure a reliable water source for the future growth and expansion of the industries that we hope to entice to come to southwest Minnesota or expand. Last year, the 2005 Minnesota appropriation of $2 million provided the necessary money for funding of two water towers, one in the city of Laverne, the other in the city of Worthington. Each of these towers will be connected to the Lewis and Clark Rural Water System as construction of the system continues. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman and committee members, a vitally important program to us. This project is matched 80% with federal funds, 10% local funds, 10% state funds. So we are highly leveraged project. It's our hope, Senator Vickerman and I and others in the legislature's hope that we can get this funding of slightly over $3 million to finish the state's commitment to the total project. Mr. Chairman and members, today we have Mr. Red Arndt with us to talk about the project. And after his presentation, Senator Vickerman and I and Mr. Arndt, any questions you have.
Welcome to our committee, Mr. Arndt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Red Arndt. I'm here on behalf of the Lewis and Clark Joint Powers Board. I also serve on the board of the Lewis and Clark Rural Water System. The Lewis and Clark Rural Water System is a 14-county water supply system covering areas in three states. The service area of the system covers an area equal to the size of the state of Connecticut. And I'm pleased to return this year to testify again and requesting a favorable bond recommendation
that will allow for the continued construction of this much-needed project in Minnesota. There are four systems in southwest Minnesota that participate in this project: the City of Luverne, the City of Worthington, Rock Rural County Rural Water, Lincoln Pipestone Rural Water System. The need for water from the Lewis and Clark is due to the fact that each of these systems do not have the quantity or the quality of water to serve as the residents of this region. Our current water supply comes from shallow wells and are not particularly good producers. When you rely on a shallow aquifer, you are much more vulnerable to the water supply problems during periods of drought, and your water supply is more easily contaminated if there is some kind of surface activity like a chemical spill. The Lewis and Clark system will augment our current water supply and will be a reliable source of water to meet future needs. It also ensures that we will have the water supply that won't be at risk in times of drought. This legislation, which requests $3.282 million, enables us to meet the water needs of southwest Minnesota while working within the constraints imposed on this project by an agreement between the Lewis and Clark Rural Water System and the Federal Bureau of Reclamation, as well as the Minnesota Constitution. Federal authorization for the project was received in 2000. The total federal funding appropriated to date is over $63 million. The 2006 federal appropriation was $17.5 million, and this year the President has proposed $21 million in the federal funding for 2007, which is 40% more than what he put in the budget for last year. And we hope our congressional delegation will increase this figure into the $30 million range. The three-state delegation backs this. We have the support of the six senators and the representatives from the area of the three states. And I think copies of a report entitled The Economic and Fiscal Impacts of Construction of the Lewis and Clark Rural Water System has been distributed. The report calculates the benefits from the construction of the system, but the real economic benefit will be realized when the water is delivered, enabling members to attract and expand business and industry. The report drafted by HCR Engineering of Sioux Falls of South Dakota estimates that the total economic impact to the three-state region from project construction will equal $374 million in 2004 dollars. The report also estimates the project will result in a creation of 266 construction jobs on an average year, or 3,730 jobs over the lifetime of the project. Approximately 11% of this economic benefit will be realized in Minnesota. Those industry sectors receiving the greatest benefit of construction costs include retail, trade, construction, professional scientific and technical services. In addition to the southwest Minnesota obtaining safe drinking and reliable source of water from the results of the project, the study recognizes a total tax revenue return in the amount of more than $2.74 million in 2004 dollars to the state of Minnesota. So on behalf of the Lewis and Clark Joint Powers Board, I respectfully request and favorable recommendation to be made to the House and the Senate Capital Investment Committees of our request.
Thank you.
I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay. Any questions from the members? Yes. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, what percentage of the water that would run through the water line is allocated to other things other than drinking water, such as irrigation?
Right now, there is no member that will allow irrigation. It is just for the Lewis and Clark system is a wholesale water supply to the cities and to the rural water systems for residential use and for their industry. But there's no irrigation on the system at all.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. When I read a lot of the initial package on the Lewis and Clark system, they had stated in there that some of the uses would be irrigation stuff. Is that so that's not accurate anymore?
I don't think that ever... I've been on board 15 years, and I don't think we're ever going to do irrigation.
Okay, I remember reading it.
It would just supplement the local water systems, which none of them are hooked to an irrigation system.
That's really important to me in terms of financing, that we are using it specifically for drinking water, water services for cities and stuff.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Magnus, do you have anything to say in conclusion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is something some of you may have seen an article a couple months ago in the Star and Tribune newspaper about the Lewis and Clark Water Project, and when I first heard about the problems we were having in southwest Minnesota, and I knew about it. I had relatives in some areas that are really desperate for water. But the Star and Tribune article did a good job explaining this. It talked about some of the areas we've had where we've had to turn down livestock growth and expansion, industry growth and expansion. A lot of our industry in that area of the state is value-added agriculture, ethanol plants, processing plants, biodiesel plants, take a lot of water. And pork processing, poultry processing also take a lot of water. That's the resource we have, agriculture. Unfortunately, it takes a lot of water, and more unfortunately, we just don't have it. And the area is really desperate for water, and we're turning down too many companies for economic development purposes to get because of the shortage of good water we have.
Mr. Chair, just one final statement. This system does not take the place of what we have down there now. It just supplements that. Can't they have still use their own water systems? It just helps.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I've been following this for 15 years. Ever since I was on the Water Commission, we've been looking at this thing, and I think we just have to follow through now and continue to help them and fund them and get this thing out of the way. I kind of joke sometimes we got to finish a project before some of the original thinkers and starters on this die.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, actually Red Arndt had red hair when this project.
And Senator Dill had real black hair.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, I just had a question sparked by Representative Magnus. Information that a lot of this is going to be passing through processing facilities and so on. And I'm just wondering, we had some testimony yesterday from Senator Dunbar and his bill about the ability to make sure that water, when it's used in various systems and picks up some of the kinds of contaminants that would certainly be in that sort of system. I'm just wondering if you may not be familiar with what we're talking about, but maybe Senator Dunbar could elaborate a bit, but there are certainly, when we're talking about poultry and other sorts of things about antibiotics and all the other kinds of things that are in the feed, water goes through. I presume the wastewater system deals with that in some way, and I'm just wondering, maybe you're not familiar with Senator Dunbar's idea, but it is a certain kind of cleaning up process, and I'm wondering if you could, but maybe the Senator knows a little bit about that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, Worthington is the home of, I think, the largest pork processing plant in the United States, the Swift plant. They process about 17,000 hogs a day.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendous asset for us and tremendous source of employment. They are desperate for water, and they're trying all kinds of techniques of recycling as much water as they can. Frankly, all the facilities down there are. They're trying to research new ways to better use the water they have. That's about the extent I can explain. I'm not familiar with Senator Dunbar's idea on this. So.
Maybe it's a further conversation.
Thanks.
Mr. Arndt.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, as far as the conservation of water, we started, as Senator Dill said, 15 years ago with this, and those were some of the first questions that we were asked. We were some of the first systems that reported our conservation and emergency plan back to the state. The federal legislation requires us to do conservation, and so the whole thing as far as trying to, to treat our water and to keep everything safe is all part of the federal legislation and also what we're doing on state level. So. And have been doing for 15 years just to try and keep us in enough water. So.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll lay this over for possible inclusion in our binding priorities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I think now, because of their far distance from the Twin Cities, we're going to have Representative Moe and Senator Rood come up next so folks can go back and see Paul Bunyan. They moved him.
The land was worth so much there.
Mr. Chair,
do
you have some handouts for the
committee? Yes. Slayton's. Senator Vickerman, we'll get your two bills right after this.
I've learned over the years to be very patient.
I appreciate that. You have been my mentor for many years now. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have with us today Mayor Richard Lehman, who is going to talk to you about the Regional Event Center in Bemidji. We're very excited about this project. It brings together the entire Bemidji community. Public, private, non-profits have all come together in support of this event center. No other effort in Bemidji has received such a broad-based support of major businesses and organizations. So we're very excited about this project, and Representative Moll.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thanks also for moving us up on the agenda so the mayor can get back to his constituents in Bemidji. A couple quick things. This project is extremely important to our area. Bemidji Leads, which is our regional organizing effort, has brought together the university with the city, has gotten the support of all the surrounding cities, counties, and a variety of other community organizations have united behind this issue as being the primary legislative priority for our community and our whole region in the upcoming legislative session. I think many of you know the governor has also supported this project, and with that, I'm going to turn it over to our distinguished mayor, Richard Lehman.
Welcome to the committee, Mayor. Give your name for the record, please.
Pardon?
Give your name for the record.
Oh, hi, I'm Mayor Richard Lehman, the city of Bemidji. And as Representative Moe and Senator Rood have stated, this is a priority for the city of Bemidji. We have worked very, very hard on this project and focused on it. As you're aware, Bemidji is becoming more and more of a regional center, and by completing the event center, which is something that is missing in our area, approximately 125 miles in any direction to the nearest event center. So you're looking at a 2.5-hour drive. Northwestern Minnesota has not been serviced with an event center of the style that we are proposing here. It is a joint effort by the city and the surrounding area to bring this to reality. And the city of Bemidji is very proud of the directions that we have taken as a community. And this will make us take us from being a regional center to being a full-service regional center. And the two handouts that you received, there's the kind of a color picture of a concept of what the event center could look like. Currently, we're proposing to locate this at the southern end of our downtown area. It, as you know, any community can thrive if it has a vibrant downtown area. This will just help anchor our downtown area and help it to continue to be a thriving area as well. And the concept is to kind of meld it into the existing architecture of the area, which is kind of a railroad corridor that has been utilized for other city purposes at this time.
Any... Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Mayor, the local portion of this is going to be funded with a 0.5-cent local option sales tax. Is that something that's currently in place, or is that another piece of this project being successful?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, yeah. Currently we have a 0.5-cent sales tax that was authorized by the legislature, and we implemented it beginning the first of the year. And that 0.5-cent sales tax is designated for our local parks and trails upgrading. What we propose to do is to go to the voters with a referendum and request the extension of that sales tax upon completion of the parks and trails
which we have got at about a $9.8 million. So once that has been, once that money has been raised from the sales tax to do our parks and trails in the city, then we will, we're asking the voters then to approve the extension of that to pay for the local portion of that.
Is, do you know, Mr. Mayor, the language in the state authorization of the local option sales tax, will you need a change in use of that sales tax in order to use it for another purpose, or is the language broad enough that the voters are simply going to be able to do it?
I believe that...
Mr. Chair, our understanding is that we will actually need to come to the legislature again to get the legislature to approve an extension of that sales tax. And, of course, we'll also be going to the voters. We think that we interpret the law as such that we need to go to the voters, one, but two, we wouldn't be supporting it without the city of Bemidji's referendum passing it.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we will lay this House file 2633 over for possible inclusion on bonding priorities. Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate
you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Senator Bickerman.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to start because I know we've got a long day ahead of us, and people from Slayton can fill in here, and I'll start out, and then we will move this process along.
Mm-hmm. Are we working on Senate File 2416?
Yes, Mr. Chair. It kind of follows the same speaker that was just left this chair that I'm sitting in. We're trying to figure out a way to get a regional event center in the city of Slayton. We're down in the southwestern part of Minnesota. If you were to drive down there, the town is full of cars. And the reason it's full of cars is because we have the Southwest Regional Development Commission is housed there. The Prairie Land Economic Development Corporation is there. The Minnesota River Area Agency on Aging is there. The Southwestern Minnesota Housing Partnership is there. The U.S. Department of Agriculture Farm Service Agency is located there. And the Natural Resources Conservation Corporation is also in Slayton. And what is happening, if you come down there and would be with me, you'd have to go probably over to Jackpot Junction to find a place to have any kind of event, because there's none in Tracy, there's none in Avoca. Even the very biggest city in Worthington does not have a community center that can handle any kind of a convention or any kind of a function. And so rather than have people go, and I have nothing against the casinos, but I just assume that they would have a place other than going to a casino to work. And so we put this package together and try to do it in a regional manner instead of just putting it like to one typical town. I think that's what we want to stress. It's more of a regional manner. And Mr. Chair, I have some people here today, if it'd be all right. We have the Mayor, Hal Werps from Slayton, Kerry Carlson, Assistant Clerk Administrator to the City of Slayton. We also have Kate Hermanson, Economic Development Authority, and they will go through some of the explanation. If I could get somebody to pass this out, I would appreciate that, Mr. Chair. What is the resolution of the city? So I'm going to step aside and let them step up here and help with the project. Captain Magnus is also outside, I hope.
I am. Representative Magnus. Thank you, Senator Vickerman, and thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Again, my hometown, Slayton, Minnesota, always talked about as the hub city, because we are the center of the nine county area in the southwest Minnesota, and Senator Vickerman says we don't have a facility in the whole area like the one we're proposing. So our initiative is coming forth as a regional initiative, not just the city of Slayton, certainly. The southwest corner of the state, basically. We're the home of
A lot of wind turbines. We've got a tremendous resource there in the wind resource we have. A lot of turbines going up. A new trail that Senator Vickerman and I are working on, the Casey Jones Trail coming in there. We're in desperate need of this facility. Our school system is cramped. The tornadoes, and I'm sure Ms. Harmson will talk about this in a little while, the tornadoes we had a few years ago wiped out the school systems basically in Chandler, Lake Wilson. They've joined Murray County Central now at Slayton. So we need a facility to handle the overflow from the sports activities there. But again, on a regional basis, when you look at the area and the towns that we cover. So, Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you very much for hearing our bill this morning. And we'll, after our discussion, we'll have opportunity for questions and answers if you wish.
Would you please give your name for the record?
Yes, my name is Kate Harmson. And I would like to thank you on behalf of the City of Slayton and the members of the Slayton Regional Event Center Committee that are with me here today to allowing us the opportunity to present our request at this time. The city has long desired to build a facility that would serve a variety of functions for the region. Several years ago, an application was made for grant funds from the Kroc Foundation, but we were not awarded any funds at that time. So late last fall, we determined that we should proceed to the legislature to request $1 million in bonding dollars. And since that time, we've had more than 25 citizens of our community on about 8 different committees volunteering time and effort to meet weekly. We've been working to gain regional and local support for our project, and we've been in preparation for designing the proposed facility and also planning our fundraising efforts. As the gentleman said, Slayton is located in the heart of Southwest Minnesota and has called itself the Hub City since the 1960s because of the location. Since Slayton is at the very center of the nine-county region, it is home to many regional agencies and businesses, which Doug also alluded to there with the Southwest Regional Development Commission, the Minnesota River Area Agency on Aging, the Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership, Clayland Economic Development Corporation, the USDA Service Center is located there, along with the Farm Service Agency, Natural Resources Conservation Services, as well as United Parcel Service. These organizations are in dire need of a place to hold regional activities and meetings. Most of these organizations host monthly, quarterly, and annual meetings and are often forced to go elsewhere because of the lack of meeting facilities in Slayton. It's time-consuming and it's expensive to taxpayers to have staff of these organizations always leaving Slayton to attend these meetings. The proposed 17,500-square-foot facility would be able to host meetings varying in size from 50 to over 1,000 guests, as well as host banquets, wedding receptions, sporting events, tournaments, theater, performing arts, and concerts, as well as farm and home or boat shows. Southwest Minnesota does not currently have a facility of this nature. As Slayton is at the center of the nine-county region, a regional event center located here would be a boost to our rural economy by encouraging outside dollars to be spent within this area. By harvesting our local natural resources, the regional event center will be a state-of-the-art facility which would incorporate wind, solar, and corn power. Committees are developing plans which would allow for a self-contained wind power generator as well as a corn-burning heat source unit for the winter months. Southwest Minnesota has much to offer visitors, and again, due to our location, we are in a close proximity to many of them. We boast the Windy Buffalo Ridge, which is now home to hundreds of wind turbines. We have beautiful Lake Chetak. The Casey Jones Trail is projecting through the area. And we have many fine parks, such as Blue Mountain State Park near Laverne, Garvin Park, Lake Chetak State Park, as well as a rich history maintained by the Endeline Park in Curry and our own Murray County Historical Museum. Our regional support committee has garnered the support of many area communities, businesses, and groups, and we have obtained resolutions from the City of Slayton and from the Murray County Central Schools in support of our project. We are researching methods to begin a comprehensive fundraising effort and will be contacting friends and neighbors, including alumni of the schools in the area, to request pledges to help pay for the cost of constructing these facilities. The Murray County Early Childhood Initiative Committee has piloted programs for the state of Minnesota for children ages birth to five and is a leader of these programs statewide. This important program continues to grow, and because of scheduling conflicts at the local school, has no place to hold large events. As you know, our population is aging and our seniors are very active. It is our intention to have a facility that would provide adequate space to offer various programs, courses, fun activities, and entertainment to enhance their lives. We would like to offer more programs for senior citizens at a location available to them during the daytime hours, such as hall walking, which can only be done early in the morning at the school. We are proposing a city-owned and operated event center that merges all ages together by relocating the Senior Citizen Center and Senior Transportation Office to this facility, and possibly including an on-site daycare. An on-site daycare facility could be utilized during any functions that would take place at the center and allow families to bring children along and have them cared for in a safe environment. We would envision volunteer seniors joining the effort to staff the daycare center. The proposed facility is estimated to cost $2,112,500 based on 17,500 square feet, and we intend to pursue a comprehensive fundraising campaign to raise the monies needed to build the facility. Our fundraising proposal is outlined in your packets, as well as a letter which will be mailed to our area residents and alumni of our area schools to ask for pledges and donations. On behalf of our group from Slayton, we would like to thank you for allowing us this opportunity to present our request. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to try to answer them.
Thank you. Any questions from the membership? Representative Mahoney.
Just out of curiosity, in this nine-county area, do you have a population number? Is it a million or is it 500,000? Or?
The whole first district.
We're probably at about 110,
15. Maybe 110, 115,000. I know Murray County is under 10,000 people alone, just Murray County, but we are one of the smallest.
15,000 or so.
So 100, 110, 125,000 people in the
night. Okay, thanks. Any other questions? Representative Westenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for our panel. Just out of curiosity, what type of opposition are you running into in your local community? I mean, is there any from private entities that would like to host wedding receptions and those types of things?
Well, we're not intending to compete with our area. We have a few restaurants that do hold banquets and have wedding receptions there. What we're planning to do in this facility is include a caterer's kitchen, so that those folks that run those businesses could, you know, we could have caterers come in instead of actually competing and having our own kitchen set up there that, you know, that would be staffed. So we really have had no opposition. We didn't give you copies of all the letters we had in support of our project, but it's a wide area of support within our area, Pipestone, Curry, you know, the whole area around Slayton. That we've gotten support, you know, from businesses as well as cities and agencies. So.
I think I'm running up to Council Investment Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm Cal Wirtz, Mayor of Slayton. I think we have very strong community support for this effort. We've done surveys where we've had overwhelming support for the process. I believe that we're trying to build a facility that will complement existing businesses and facilities, but I think it's important to the city of Slayton because of the number of Southwest Regional Development Commission and so forth, those kinds of area businesses and so forth that are located in Slayton, we need to have some kind of a place where these people can have meetings and so forth. So I think we have very strong support from this, and we hope to minimize the cost of this to the taxpayer by, as Kate alluded to, raising a major portion of the cost of the building by fundraising efforts. Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Yes, Mr. Chair, when we got together and decided to see if we could get this package together, I made it very clear to them that you're not going to be able to come and ask for $2 million unless you're willing to match. I've been on bonding committees before. It's very nice if you can match. And that's why they're asking for roughly $1 million and you're going to raise $1 million. that makes a plus. And one other plus that people sometimes forget, Lake Chetak is the biggest lake in southwestern Minnesota. I believe there's 600 or 700 homes right on Lake Chetak. Now these aren't cabins, these are homes. And there's no place for it to even have a meeting if we wanted to have one out there. I don't know where we'd go. So it has work to do, and I've done on these before. I don't know just exactly how this one's worded, but until you raise some money, you don't get the million. You have to have the match in place. I believe I'm right. I think I'm right anyway.
Well, it is preferred, that's for sure.
Sure.
And especially for a project that's not a state-owned project. I'm kind of glad you told me that you have your match, because I trying to figure out, I know you people are frugal out there, but how can you get a 17,000-square-foot building for $1 million? And I'm glad you got a match. That's part of it. But still, you have to be awful, awful frugal to do it. Senator Fredrickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Armisen and Senator Vickerman, I know of a similar facility in the district I represent at Redwood Falls, and they started with a very similar goal and similar dream, and they're successful in building it, and that's at Redwood Falls. It's a cooperative effort between the city of Redwood Falls and Redwood Valley School, and I don't know if you've talked with those folks or not, but if you haven't, I would suggest you do so, because they worked on it about 10 years ago. The result is a community center that's adjoining the school, connected, and during the day it's essentially a school facility. They have four basketball courts in their arena. There's a daycare, there's a fitness center, and the community meeting rooms. And when it's not school hours, it's open to the entire community, and it's used by the entire community, and they host, regional athletic events there, because I have grandsons that play basketball there a couple times a year. It was very successful, but that was a cooperative effort involving a few million dollars from the school, $1 million or more than $1 million from the city, and another $1 million from the community. And we also, the state, provided about $1 million of bonding to make that whole thing come together and work. So I wish you success in your effort. It's a valuable addition to the community. It adds to quality of life. It's something people think about and look at when they decide to move to a community. You know, what's available. Thank you, Senator.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll take House file.
Senate file.
Senate file 2416 and lay it over for possible inclusion of bonding priorities. Representative Magnus, just out of curiosity, who's Kathy Magnus?
Mr. Chairman, I should issue a note of disclaimer right now. Kathy Magnus is not my wife, not my daughter, but she's married to one of my cousins.
Okay.
So I do have a little vested interest in this, Mr. Chair, but not as much as if my wife was doing it.
Senator Vickerman, we have one more, I believe. You have one more bill, is that correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for your patience. This project is called the North Windham Wastewater Improvement Project, and what it would identify would appropriate $385,000 from bond proceeds to the City of Windham to extend a wastewater line to North Windham Industrial Park. This infrastructure improvement would serve as an existing businesses as well as several non-compliance residents. Most importantly, if we want to have development down in rural Minnesota, we have to provide some kind of sewer system. And this is just an extension. The Windham City Council passed a resolution on January 3rd. I believe that's here if I get somebody to pass it out, that they're fully in support of this. And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask Dennis Nelson, who was a former city administrator that I've worked with over the years, to explain this project. And he will be joined by Dennis Johnson, the city engineer, and Mary Henson, administrative assistant to the Economic Development Authority. Mr. Chair, they can answer the questions easier than I can just read them off, because you do want the answers. So I'll just turn it over to them, Mr. Chair. Could you give your name for the record, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator. My name is Dennis Nelson. As Senator Vickerman mentioned, I am the
former city administrator for the city of Windham after 32 years in local government, with 26 of those with the city of Windham. I recently retired. I knew Senator Vickerman when his hair was also a different color, and I had hair. So we go back many years and worked on a lot of projects over that time period. This particular project is a project that Representative Hamilton and I first discussed, I believe, back in about August when I was still on the City of Windham payroll. The City of Windham, my predecessor, they recently have hired a new individual from the City of Iowa City who will be on the payroll in about 30 days. So the president of the Economic Development Authority called me the other day and asked if I'd be courteous enough to get on the road at 6:30 a.m. and testify on behalf of the City of Windham, which I'm honored to do. City of Windham has been very good to me and my family. And you have delivered to you, I believe, this morning a packet outlining the project. There's a couple of resolutions of support adopted by the City Council, some as current as last night at the City Council meeting. You have a preliminary design grid layout of an industrial park that our EDA recently purchased 80 acres, have subdivided this property, have gotten it qualified into the Job Z zone. You have also in that packet the estimated cost of extension of the sanitary sewer or wastewater main out to this particular site. There are additional costs within the subdivision, those having to do with streets, storm sewers, sanitary sewers, and water services. You have a couple of letters of support in your packet as well from the mayor. And I might add that the mayor and city council let them send their greetings to your members. And you also have a letter from the president of the Windham Economic Development Authority. I have not been detailed involved with this project over the last 90 to 120 days because of my retirement from the public sector. But so if you have some technical questions, I'd have to defer them to the city engineer or the administrative assistant, Mary Henson, here. But in short term, the city is proposing a total project of about $1.5 million for infrastructure costs into a new industrial park. The city currently has an industrial park, but we've been fortunate enough to have most of the lots sold. We just have a couple of smaller lots remaining that are for sale. We've seen tremendous growth in that industrial park over the last 10 years, and we hope to see continued growth in a new industrial park. Of that approximately $1.5 million cost is the cost associated with extension of a sanitary sewer or wastewater. We have also outside the city limits but located within Cottonwood County a number of residential properties that have failing systems. I believe there's a letter in there from Cottonwood County's environmental office referring to those. Those particular properties would also, we're proposing to be allowed to be tied in and into the system as well. If you have some questions, we'll try to answer them.
Any questions from the members? Seeing none. Any further testimony you would like to do, Senator?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton is not here, and I bear some blame for that because I didn't inform him that we were going to be bringing this up, but he is going to carry it on the House side. Just want you to know that.
Okay, appreciate that. Senator Bach.
Mr. Nelson, is this new North Windham Industrial Park totally within the city limits?
Yes. It's recently been annexed within the last, 18 months approximately is when it was annexed in. Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Nelson, this new industrial park is a Job Z zone?
Yes, it is. It qualified as a Job Z.
I would like you to understand that I thought the Job Z's were supposed to be funded separately and everything else, and now we're sewer lines now for Job Z's. So it's an interesting concept. the target on these jobs, these from our governor's office, continues to change on a regular basis.
Yes, Mr. Chair, may I respond to that again, and I can defer this over to the city engineer. Earlier this morning, you had a conversation with some members from the water authorities. Wyndham is surrounded by Red Rock Rural Water Authority. The water for this particular subdivision we're proposing would be furnished in part from that agency. In fact, the city has had discussions with that agency to purchase some of their existing infrastructure in that area once we annex that area. Sanitary sewer facilities. Initially, we're planning to just simply have development consisted what I refer to as cold storage warehouse type of industries. In other words, then just on-site septic systems. And that was kind of the thought all along. It's just recently now that some people have identified a need for extension of sanitary sewer, in part to assist in the industrial part, but also to assist in some of these properties that are outside the city limits to assist them in obtaining some sanitary sewer, because the county, from what we've been told, has red-tagged their systems.
So, Mr. Chair, so now what you're trying to do is get me mad at the Lewis and Clark water treatment?
Well, that's a very good comment, but no, Red Rock Water System is not part of Lewis and Clark.
Oh, okay.
In fact, City of Wyndham, even though we're 30 miles from Lewis and Clark, City of Wyndham is in the Mississippi Watershed District, which does not allow Red Rock or the City of Wyndham access to Lewis and Clark. You have to be in the Missouri Watershed District to access those waters. That's another subject, but I'm glad you brought that up.
I'm not. Senator Jungbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know who can answer this, but I'm seeing there's grant money received from the Greater Minnesota Business Development, and the request for money here. Is there local money going to this project as well? Because I'm not seeing it in your presentation here.
Yes, we're currently, I believe, the current funding sources are a couple of different avenues. Typical bond issue is one with assessing those costs back. Another source is working through South Central REA. They have a low-interest industrial development fund process, I believe, that they fund through the USDA or something. I'm not familiar. Applications are pending with that authority as well.
Okay, any other questions? Seeing none, we'll lay that over for possible inclusion in our bonding priorities. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for your patience.
Yeah, we're going to do two more house files, and we're going to go to lunch. And Representative Dorman and Senator Sparks said it would only take 5 minutes each. Let's keep them honest.
Yeah. We'll try to keep it under that.
Okay. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. And appreciate you taking the time to hear a couple of issues that are important to City of Albert Lea, which is in my legislative district and also in Senator Sparks' district. And I'm joined today by Victoria Simonson. Victoria is the city manager of the City of Albert Lea, and Mr. Steve Yonke. He is the city engineer. The two bills that we've got before your committee, Mr. Chair, I don't know which order you want to take them in, but come up Catherine Island maybe first, and I've got should be a couple handouts that are coming out. Catherine Island is an island that is in Fountain Lake, which is, if you're familiar with Albert Lea, there's Albert Lea Lake, which is the one you all see when you go over the interstate, and Fountain Lake is in the heart of the city, and Catherine Island has been part of the city for almost 100 years and is deteriorating rapidly, and we need to do something to bring back some of the events that we've done there. I was visiting with Manager Simonson this morning, and one thing that needs to be take a kid fishing. I think there's 400 or 500 kids. I've had to move that and try to get it somewhere else because you can only walk six people at a time across the bridge, and the shoreline is not very safe, and there's a get your hand out, you see some pictures of what it looks like depending on the level of water. As I'm sure many members are aware of, both the Albert Lea and Austin area past several years has suffered significant flooding, and doesn't seem to be getting better, it seems to be getting worse. And while we don't have a river, we've got
a lot of lake property, a lot of things that run into those lakes that have been causing some of the problems. You see in that top picture, you can see the water or the island underwater. So that small request, and we realize it would have to be the local match, but it would help us put the retaining and riprap wall back in there and put a bridge back to get people using that island again, making sure it's safe, hopefully get the get fishing program back. The second bill, and you want to just present both of them to see if, all right. Second bill again relating to the flooding you'll see in the handout. Take a look at the picture. That picture is on West Main Street, but you can see a very similar picture on East Main Street on the other side of downtown. And in these rapid rain events, there's so much bounce that the lake, Elbert Lee Lake, can't take it all, and it can't get into the Shell Rock River fast enough, and it actually backs up, and it starts to back up and, you know, reverse into the city, and that caused the problem on some of these stormwater lift stations. And when a stormwater or a sewer water lift station floods, that's not a not a good thing for a variety of reasons that I'm sure you can only imagine. With that, Mr. Chair and members, I'll probably see if Senator Sparks has some comments that he'd like to make, but then turn it over to the people who know more about it than I do. And I may have to sneak out to somebody from across the street. His office wants to talk about a bonding bill at noon, and so I probably shouldn't be too late.
Senator Sparks. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Chair, and members. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in front of you today, and certainly want to be considered a member at times. I think Representative Dorman did a good job of explaining the two bills that are in front of you today. After the devastating floods of 2004, these are two very important projects for the city of Elbert Lee and for all of Fribourg County. It's part of a long-term flood mitigation plan that we put together, and so with that, Mr. Chair, I will turn it over to either Victorian or Stephen, who would ever like to testify first.
Well, again, thank you.
Would you give your name for the record?
Sure. Victoria Simonson, City Manager for the City of Elbert Lee. Representative Dorman did do a great job overview of Catherine Island, so I'm not going to address that further. The sanitary and stormwater lift station upgrades are actually part of a $10 million inflow and infiltration program that the city has in place. This is just one piece toward that. As you can see from the pictures, that's Highway 13. During 2004, during that flood event, we had two sections, one of Highway 65 and one of Highway 13, that were completely, we had to divert all traffic around our community. So for 13 days, while the water stood across the highways, we did not have any commerce, basically, in our community. And that is a huge factor to those local businesses, as well as people who are traveling. It's a huge inconvenience. We are needing to upgrade specifically this 8th Avenue storm lift station. It was built 50 years ago and was only meant to handle about 60 acres of land. Department of Transportation came in and added about 300 acres to that lift station, so it never keeps up if we get more than an inch or two of rain. And so it's really vital not only to the people who live in that area, but also to our commerce and industry and transportation to get those upgrades to actually three lift stations that are all impacted by major flood events.
I remember going over there, and I was wondering if Representative Dorman's parking lot was going to...
It was close.
It was close to the door, I hear.
Close to the door, but out of the store. And so, but it does, you know, for those of you who don't know, far be it for me to mention that I'm a retailer, because that probably wouldn't be appropriate, but we do have a tire sale going on, but I won't mention that we're at 505 East Main. Exactly. But we're on the other side of Main, and, you know, fortunately, last year's bonding bill, there was some buyouts that happened across the street from us. We like our location. We're a little bit higher. We don't want to go anywhere. But for the people that are you know, these guys were just out of business. They couldn't get to them. And it's a bad situation. Same thing happened in Austin. Sometimes the picture is a little more dramatic because you get the big aerial shot, but the same thing is really happening in both those communities.
Any questions from the members? Seeing that, we'll lay both of these proposals over for possible inclusion in our capital investment recommendation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairs and
did
members.
Did we stay under 5 minutes?
You did well.
lunch. Thank you.
We will recess until 1:05 for lunch. We'll see you at 1:05. Call this meeting to order. We all should be able to stay really alert so Senator Saxhawk can have all of our attention. You say we're going to take the steel plant one?
We are. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, today I'm presenting a binding request for infrastructure on a steel plant in Itasca County, and with me today is Chuck Michael representing Itasca County, and he's going to go over the proposal with you and answer any questions.
Okay, Mr. Michael.
Before I turn it over to Mr. Michael, Mr. Chair and members, on your agenda was also a bill that was introduced by Representative Anderson. I think it's 190.
Yes, correct.
That is rolled into the presentation that we have today.
Okay.
So I want that to be clear that that's part of this project. And I think what we'll do is serve time. We'll have some comments afterwards, but I think Mr. Michael would bring us through the technical parts of the request. And let me get him to have the mic here.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you.
Welcome to our committee, Mr. Michael. Would you give me a name for the record, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Chuck Michael. I'm with SEH Engineers representing Itasca County this afternoon. And the program before us, and you should have a handout with this cover on it. This is the Public Infrastructure Improvement Program to support the development of Mesaba Energy and Minnesota Steel. These are two projects that are located within a few miles of each other near Taconite and Nashwauk, Minnesota. And this is generally between Grand Rapids and Hibbing along Highway 169. These are extremely large projects, and the request before you today for the public infrastructure, as we start out, is in the neighborhood of $100 million. The cost of this public infrastructure, even at that level, represents about 3% of the capital cost that will be expended between these two projects up north. The Minnesota Steel project, and Mr. John Elmore is here this afternoon. He's the president of Minnesota Steel. He can answer any specific questions on that company. And Mr. Pat Nicoletti is here from Excelsior Energy, the developer of the Mesaba Energy project. So we have the resources to answer some questions. We should be out of here within a week or 10 days, I think, with all the questions.
Okay.
Minnesota Steel Project generally is a very unique facility. It's a mine mouth taconite mine and pellet plant, direct reduction iron facility, and steel mill, all integrated in one site. Estimated capital cost on the order of $1.6 billion. On the opposite end of the site is Mesaba Energy, which is planned to be a 1,200 megawatt integrated gasification combined cycle coal gasification plant. It will is planned to be the cleanest coal-fueled facility in the world. So these have significant statewide benefits as well as regional and national attributes that I think are extremely important as you deliberate on your decisions here. The infrastructure to support these two facilities, sponsored by Itasca County, individually add up to on the order of $114 million. However, because of their close proximity, they're within a few miles of each other, as we laid out the infrastructure, and this is the roadways, the railroad, the water and sewer facilities, and the gas pipeline, we found some opportunities to share those infrastructure elements and to combine them in order to save some initial capital costs in the development of that. So the net cost of this infrastructure now is about $92.4 million for the road, the rail, the gas pipeline, and the water and sewer. For the Minnesota Steel facility, it's located inside Nashwauk. And the city of Nashwauk would provide potable water and domestic wastewater treatment support to that plant. On the opposite side of the area over by Mesaba Energy, the city of Taconite would supply drinking water and domestic wastewater services to that facility. So the companion bill that we talked about earlier with the city of Nashwauk, this is the water and sewer improvements at the city of Nashwauk to support Minnesota Steel. Inside this document are lots of numbers, and we won't take time this afternoon to go through those, but I think it's important to highlight the fact that these projects are proceeding. Right now, both of them are in the environmental review and permitting processes as prescribed by law. As they come out of these permitting processes and they approach financial close, we should see the financial close of both of those projects in 07. And that is less than a year from now in some cases. So, and as they approach financial close, the lenders are needing to see that the infrastructure will be in place, that the public infrastructure will be in place to support the development of these facilities. Minnesota Steel will rely on natural gas as its fuel in the process. Without this gas line in place, they simply cannot operate. They will receive materials and goods on the rail line. They will export from the site. They will transport their finished product, the steel, off-site on the rail lines. Mesaba Energy is a coal fuel facility. They will receive coal on their rail line, and without a rail line, they simply cannot operate. And again, the time frame gets very aggressive because these are massive capital investments that you simply don't take your time to develop. They have to be done as quickly as possible. So the public infrastructure improvements through Itasca County encompasses the rail, the road, the gas pipeline, and the water and sewer, again up to the estimated cost of $92.4 million. And with that, I'm sure Mr. Elmore or Mr. Micheletti could answer specific project questions, and I can attempt to answer some on behalf of Itasca County.
Mr. Chair, Bob, are you doing the chairing?
I am.
Okay, Mr. Chair. In front of you also is a thing from Itasca Development Corporation, Jobs 2020. Relates to the economy in Itasca County specifically, but to the range in general. As you can see, this is an extremely important opportunity to create good-paying jobs. These aren't call-in center jobs. These are mining and steelworking, steel creation jobs. In Minnesota Steel Industries, for generations, we've taken our iron ore and shipped it out east and let those out east have our byproduct, our product, our natural resource, and use that natural resource to create good product paying jobs in Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Gary, Indiana, and other places. There's no value added in the state of Minnesota to that other than we take for generations of ore out and have shipped it away for someone else to add value. This is the first time in Minnesota Steel's case where we're adding value. We're going to take the natural resource, use the direct reduced iron process, and make that iron ore instead of 68% iron ore or 64% iron ore pellet that we ship, make it into a 98% iron, and then use electric arc furnaces and be actually shipping out a steel product instead of an iron ore product. And we're adding a great deal of value to the product that we're shipping out. This is probably the largest project, manufacturing project, and the largest single user of natural gas in the state of Minnesota. It's that huge of a project. I don't know of any other project that's in the state that has a capital cost of $1.6 billion for construction costs. This is extremely important for us as a region, as you can tell by our unemployment efforts, but it's extremely important for us as a state to finally add product. In addition to that, I think the benefit to the state is an income royalties, because the state owns some of the minerals that will be mined to the tune of about $18 million a year payback to the state. So our return on investment is about 30% a year. With that, I would like to have concentrate on Minnesota Steel, if that's okay, Mr. Chairman, and have John Elmore come up and talk about that portion of the project. We got kind of a combined project in here. I think it's important for him to give a perspective of where they're at in financing and the importance of the infrastructure to this particular project.
Welcome, our committee. Mr. Elmore, would you please give your name for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Elmore, Minnesota Steel Industries. As Representative Solberg said, from our perspective, where we are in financial close, just to correct Mr. Michaels, we're looking at financial close by the end of this year. So 2006 is our target for financial close, construction beginning in 2007. It's extremely important in a project like this as we look at a private investment in the state of Minnesota that the state has a commitment or some kind of commitment in a project of this. This is very similar to what happened in the state of Mississippi, where the first steel mill in over 10 years was just recently financed, and the state put about $100 million behind it, which is about 12% of the capital cost. In Ohio, they put significant monies into AK Steel, et cetera. And I think what it sends a very strong signal to the investment community that the state is behind a project like this and that it's willing to align its interest in moving a project forward. So it's not something new, but what we're looking at in support of Itasca County is something that is very prevalent in the states, and something that investors that are going to put $1.6 billion into a state are looking forward to. As Representative Solberg also said, this is also a wealth generator, and I think as the community looks at that, and as the investment community looks at that, they're saying if we're putting back $18 million a year into the state, then there should be some kind of, again, a commitment from the state's perspective going forward. We're extremely excited about the opportunity in the financial markets. We retained our investment banker, and we would anticipate that we'll be back out to the finance community starting in June to take this thing forward. So it's a wonderful opportunity right now for us and for the state.
I can't agree more. I remember not too long ago I read a Wall Street Journal article saying the range is back. I hope that's the case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is a long-term range back.
This is a 20-year commitment plus into the range. So,
Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How far can $7 million get you? That's what the governor has so far recommended going forward here. Can we talk about just kind of the numbers here, the need? And
I think when we're looking at a project, and we're looking at a project going forward, certain precedents have been set by the state and also by other states, and if they're looking at $100 million in the state of Mississippi for an $880 million project, $60 million is not out of the realm of, you know, we're looking at less than 5% as opposed to 12%. $7 million doesn't send a real strong signal to the investment community that the state is serious about this investment or really wants to bring in manufacturing jobs into the state. I mean, when you think about it, as you're looking forward, these are very high-paying jobs. The average is over $80,000 a person is what we're looking at, including all benefits. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot of opportunities like that. So $7 million just doesn't excite a whole lot of people. And it's more, $60 million isn't a huge portion of the project cost either, but it does send a signal that the state is committed behind it.
Let me try to answer the question a little bit as well. We're very grateful that the governor recognized the importance of this project by at least putting some money in. I've not determined exactly what it is. I would probably, if we were to say, what would you spend $7 million on if that was all you had? We would probably spend it on some design. But that doesn't bring it to the stage it needs to be in the financial markets. and that's the extreme importance of this, is that we need to be able to tell financial markets that that infrastructure is going to be in place to be able to now you can build a plant, and if it's the largest user of natural gas in the state, and if the gas line isn't there, it doesn't do as much good. And the financial markets will indicate
I'll watch them.
That's all the softball plan.
Okay. You did kind of pitch it kind of slow and easy. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Elmore, tell me a little bit about, I mean, I know, I think we all on this table understand the impact of construction employment on state revenue and the huge percentage of our domestic national product that is related to construction activity. Tell me a little bit about what the construction schedule is and maybe how many employees or how many million man hours of construction this facility is going to take in total to be completed.
Mr. Elmore.
Senator, thank you. The question for us right now is we're looking at starting construction in January of 2007, assuming we have our permits in place and environmental permitting is underway, but there are some issues within the state, as I think most of you are aware. But we do have the EIS consultant named, and assuming we have our permits in place by the end of this year, we'd start construction January 2007. It's a 30-month construction period, and we would bring in about 2,000 construction jobs over that time frame. At time of employment, or at time of startup, we'll employ up to 700 full-time employees. And then the University of Minnesota Duluth did a study that shows about 2,100 flow-on jobs or additional jobs within the state that will be created in support of the operation. Because this is a significant, obviously, not only from contracting into the plant to do some work, but also rail operators, port authority, et cetera. There's a significant impact on the state as a whole, not just the northern part of Minnesota.
How many man hours?
I couldn't even. It's a couple million man hours. Again, we're looking at a 30-month construction time frame. I can break it out by, you know, peaks and that. But it's about 2,000 total construction jobs. I don't have the exact man hours here.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the members? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have to apologize. I came in just a bit late. Now, I just want to make sure I'm following it. It's one steel mill and two power plants?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, it's two different separate projects. They're very close to each other.
Right.
And they have kind of, Itasca County is asking to be able to put in this infrastructure. If both projects would go forward, it would obviously be some shared infrastructure. So if they were built separately some other place, it'd be $114 million. That was this case. It's down to $92 million total infrastructure. And Mr. Elmore is concentrated just on the steel situation. We'll bring up Mr. Micheletti on the Excelsior Energy shortly.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Silver. No, I was just asking. I mean, you've got it on the front of the cover, Minnesota Steel Industry Taconite Mine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the Excelsior Energy and the Sabi Energy. So is it two power plants?
No, that's what the name is.
Okay.
Energy, Masabi Energy Project is a subset.
You know, it's too bad it's not a second power plant. I mean, it would lock me down right there.
There is a second power plant available. The first one would have a footprint for the ability to have the second one.
Mr. Elmore, approximately how many pipe fitters will be required for this job? You don't have to answer that.
Per plant?
You don't have to answer that.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have Pat Micheletti come up and then talk a little bit about the Excelsior Energy construction.
Very well.
And we'll wrap it up.
Very well. Would you give your name for the record, Mr. Micheletti?
My name is Pat Micheletti. I am with Excelsior Energy, Director of Public and Community Affairs.
Very well.
Thank you for having us today. I basically echo the same sentiments as Mr. Elmore and Itasca County in terms of the infrastructure needs for our project. as Mr. Michael had mentioned, we are moving forward every day. As of recent, we filed with the Public Utilities Commission our power purchase agreement, of which we are speaking with potential buyers of the power. And I'm here to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions for Mr. Micheletti?
Our construction costs, I don't have exactly, but I can tell you, well, we will be spending, approximately, I believe, in the state, $1.07 billion in construction costs.
Very well. Seeing no other questions, I move that we lay over both of these projects for future considerations and our bonding priorities. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Both Senator Sackstock and I would like to at least say one word if you do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No problem.
And Mr. Chair, we've been working on direct reduced iron for my career. My goal in my career is to get these projects up. My hair is getting gray. I suppose if the Republicans want to get me out, one way you could do is fund this right now.
I think I have somebody right close to me right now saying, can we have that in writing? Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, since how we were talking about hair and color of it, was your hair black when you started this?
No, but it was certainly not gray. But, Mr. Chair, again, I want to emphasize that this is one of the largest construction projects in the state of Minnesota history, and we're bringing in $18 million a year additional resources to the state. And that's a pretty good return on investment. So thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg and I don't take credit for this, obviously. The work's been done by the people up there that are doing economic development, you know, and bringing these ideas and doing the work to get this done. So we thank you for your time.
No problem. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just for the benefit of the committee, this is a large project for the state, and opportunities like this for states don't come along very often. And, you know, the market conditions in the metals markets right now, the time is right. And if Minnesota doesn't do it, there are other people that are going to do this, other places in the world. And this is a pretty narrow window we have here to make something very, very large happen in Minnesota. And I hope that we can work bipartisanly to make sure that happens, because the whole state is certainly going to benefit a great deal from this.
Thank you.
Very well. Thank you.
Thank you.
So next we got Silverbridge Power Plant. We got that one done. Good. You'll finally get that done. Representative Solberg, do you want to take 2715?
Is that
Grand Rapids Research?
Yeah, let's do that one. Next.
Okay.
I'll start that out, Mr. Chair.
Well, Senator.
And thank you again for allowing us to present this request. This is a public-private partnership which will create a multi-tenant enterprise incubator, a national research center, and an industry training facility. And with me today is Kirk Furstrom of Itasca Development Corporation and Itasca Technology Center, and Mike Johnson from Itasca Community College. I'm gonna turn over the definition of the project to these two.
Thank you, Senator Saxon.
Would you give your name for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Kirk Bostrom, Director of Itasca Technology Exchange, here representing partners in this project, including Itasca Development Corporation. Joining me is Mike Johnson with Itasca Community College.
Very well. Could you get next to that microphone a little bit?
Turn it up a little bit, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to give you a little background about the
economic situation in Grand Rapids has developed in Itasca County over the last 3 years. In January of 2003, the UPM Land and Paper Mill in Grand Rapids, which has been the foundation of Grand Rapids and Itasca County's economy and industrial vitality for over a century, laid off nearly 300 employees from the UPM Land and Mill in Grand Rapids. Since then, the region has responded with strategies to support the ongoing viability and expansion of UPM Blandin and other key natural resource-based industries within the region. The North Central Research and Technology Laboratory Project, which is before you today, is a key part of the regional strategy to support those industries and recognize their continued viability as instrumental in the health and viability of the regional economy. This project, as Senator Saxdog mentioned, is a true public-private partnership. It involves UPM Blandin, which is the largest producer of lightweight groundwood coated paper in the world, along with the University of Minnesota, which is a world-class research university. We're also building upon existing assets and partnerships, including Itasca Community College and their nationally recognized engineering program, and Itasca Technology Exchange, with a continuing expansion of its mission to diversify the area's economy through the development of technology-based business. These partners have come together to develop North Central Research and Technology Laboratory. This project includes development of a regional center. The center would encompass a multi-tenant enterprise incubator, research center, and industry training facility. The cornerstone of the project would be development of a North American Research Center for UPM, encompassing all of UPM's North American research operations. The University of Minnesota and Itasca Community College would play key roles in advancement of the project through cooperative research arrangements, industrial partnerships, experiential learning opportunities for students and interns, enhanced higher education opportunities and advanced training for learner workers, interns, and students, and continuing development of the university's many natural resource-based programs from their existing North Central Research Center, which adjoins the site. The bottom line for this project really is a number of opportunities have fallen into place that allow this to happen. As University of Minnesota and Itasca Community College are currently on this site and prepared to partner with UPM in developing a North American Research Center. If I'm not sure if any of you are aware, but UPM is considering the possibility of an expansion of their mill in Grand Rapids, which would potentially displace the research staff that's on that site. They had initially begun the discussions of partnering with the university and the college on expanding that to encompass all of their North American research operations. So it would be a very big opportunity for the regions. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Mike Johnson just to talk a little bit about some of the existing partnerships that the college and the university already has with UPM.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you very much for this opportunity. Very briefly, 3 years ago in January, 300 people were laid off at Blandin Paper Company, and it really changed the entire environment of the entire Itasca area. We're before you today, and I attended the Environmental Impact Statement meeting last night with well over 250 people in Grand Rapids on the proposed number 7 machine for Blandin Paper Company, the Thunderhawk project. It was 100% support. All of the people who gave testimony for it, it was 100% support. At the college, at Itasca Community College, we have a nationally known engineering program, which we have partnered with Blandin, and also we are just beginning a pulp and paper science program to not only train the incumbent workers for Blandin and other wood-based product industries within the region, but also with the University of Minnesota to provide the future workers for these particular areas. It's a complete turnaround, and as Kirk has mentioned, it appears at this time that some of the planets are lining up for a North American Research Center. If the number 7 project goes forward, their research center will be displaced where it is currently located, and UPM, from their corporate headquarters in Finland, has indicated an interest in developing this North American Research Center, which would be our anchor tenant within this research lab. On the, as far as why the college is here, and I do want to address the process, the Minsky process and University of Minnesota. We have been on a six-year initiative to be involved with economic development within our communities in northeastern Minnesota, and I've been very involved in the local Itasca area. We need to be involved with the economic development projects. Higher education will provide many things like the Thunderhawk, the workers for Thunderhawk, number 7 in the future. And that's why we're involved with this project, and it is not necessarily on the Minsky list. And that's the background I want to give on that. Dan Urkla from the University of Minnesota, North Central Research and Outreach Center, could not be here today. He also sits on the City Council for the City of Grand Rapids. And also we did talk with Mike Lalich from Natural Resources Research Institute in Duluth, and he has been a consultant towards this project and will be continually consulted as to where we move forward. Thank you.
This probably fits in the Governor's Center for Excellence in Engineering and Manufacturing that your father's Minnesota institution is involved with. They're working very much at leveraging 70-some million dollars from private sources to get this Center for Excellence done. Representative Sertich.
I think, Mr. Chairman, I actually look at it beyond the college as a public-private partnership. I think it naturally sets within this committee, especially because very similar to the Jobstone Partnership Grants, mm-hmm. which we do to train individuals. This is an interesting model to actually have a physical location.
Absolutely.
And I think it complements the work we've done on that level to be successful. I know Northern Minnesota and all over mm-hmm. the state, but mm-hmm. here's a way we can physically do it as well, partner up with a great company to see this work.
Mr. Chair, just a point of information. Years ago, and again, that's before I had as much gray hair as I have, the Appleton Research Center on Larch and Popple was being closed. And Governor Perpich said we should have that not moved to Georgia but to Minnesota. And we were able to find some resources and establish the Larch and Popple research, hybrid Popple research, on the North Central Experimental Station in Grand Rapids. It's been extremely successful. There's some great research done on it. As we look at the natural resources in the future and the ability to grow timber products, not in 40 years, but in 10-year cycle, to take those trees in the hybrid and make sure they grow fast and produce a good quality hybrid at the same time. It's come out of this facility, and this would be just a great complement to that type of facility that's being taken place right now.
Well, any questions from the members? Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I do have one question. The piece for Itasca Community College, did I hear that is not on the Minsky list of priorities? I'm curious if how much funding is requested for that and where it is in the process of prioritizing.
Mr. Chair, committee members, that is correct. It is not on the list. We have kept the Minsky Office and the Chancellor informed every step of the way as a contributing partner, as a very active partner within this particular proposal. We are looking at some space for a concept lab as well as classroom space to run the pulp and paper science program. The exact dollars, you know, how much that would be within the entire project hasn't been determined at this point yet. But they are well aware of this, and we do have the support at this point from the Office of the Chancellor as our economic development initiative in all of our northeastern Minnesota communities moves forward. Mr. Chair, committee members, if I could add to your comment on this Minnesota Center for Excellence in Manufacturing and Engineering, Itasca Community College is one of the partners with Mankato State and 5 other partners, 2-year colleges. We've been designated as one of the Centers for Excellence in Manufacturing and Engineering. So that also fits very well within this entire project.
Very well, I knew that. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Whoever is comfortable with the question can answer it, I think. UPM's number 7 machine that they're looking at to represent Mahoney about 3 million man hours. Hopefully is going to happen. I'm curious about, you said UPM has some interest in participation in this. Are these the kind of partnerships that they normally entertain in other places around the world where they have paper machines in Finland and other places? Do they work jointly like this? Is this the kind of model that they like to see, or is this something new for them?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'll address that to the best of my ability. I have talked very frequently with Joe Meyer, who is the president of Blend and Paper, and the board of directors has shown a great deal of interest in moving this forward, especially because of the public-private partnership. They are extremely excited about having the opportunity to have the educational facility tied right into their research. It allows for internships for much of the research to go on, and for the students learning for their future employees as well. So from my perspective and my discussions with Joe Maher, they're very much in favor of this. I don't know if this is something that they do in Finland or at other places.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and members, I can answer some of that because many of the companies that have put new machines in the paper industry have sold their old machines with government financing of third world countries where they have lots of trees like Indonesia and South America, and the government has financed the purchase of those machines, and our paper industry is heartily threatened by these the cheaper paper products using older mills, older rolling machines, and one of the few ways that we can stay ahead of that is to use the brain power of the state of Minnesota, and this seems to be a pretty good fit for it. So if we're going to try and stay ahead of our old machines by investing in new machines and have a company like this one from Finland, we need to provide them with the employees that can run those machines and keep ahead of the game. So I think this is a great presentation.
Okay. Any other questions from members?
Thank you.
Without that, we will lay this project over for future consideration on bonding priorities. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
We've got how many more? Silberg, McGregor, Wastewater.
Mr. Chair, we're really pleased that you put all of us in one row so we can sit here and get all done. Is the next one the McGregor one?
That's it.
Okay. We'll bring those people up. Mr. Chairman and members, as they're coming up and getting set up, this was brought to my attention a short time ago, and it's something that the county has been working on for, and it's something that the county has been working on for a while with the city of McGregor in a controlling or trying their best to be able to solve a problem without increasing the pollution that flows into Big Sandy Lake and eventually into Lake Pepin, and we don't want that to happen down the Mississippi chain. We're setting up a diesel. We'll be passing out some information for you. Maybe you can, Tom, move the diesel up here a little bit so Brian can see it a little bit better.
Yes,
but I want you to also have, if you've not had the opportunity to visit McGregor, I'd like to have you do that. Particularly right now, I want you to go up 65 because it is the roughest road in the state, bar none.
Some people say 15.
I'll put you on it. I'll buy you a big steak, but it's rougher than anything else. So, plus the fact that McGregor sits in kind of a low-lying area, so this is an extremely important project for them. We have with us a couple of a county commissioner from the area, and Aiken, the administrator, and they'll introduce themselves and walk you through this particular project and the importance for it.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Solberg. Mr. Chairman, committee members, Representative Solberg has done a good job giving a brief introduction to the project we have here. I'd like to
identify your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. Brian Napstad, Aiken County Commissioner.
Go ahead.
As to add on to what Lauren says, you have a packet in front of you which has a quick informational write-up as to the County Ditch Number 5 drainage issue. Attached to that are a couple of maps. And that map is the map, one of the first map you have is very similar to the map that is sitting here. And what I'll try to do is just verbally walk through what this project is about. And then if you'd like me to elaborate a little bit on the map, I'd certainly be happy to. This project has got a little bit of history to it. It goes back to approximately 1999 when the city of McGregor requested that the county board is the drainage authority, look into backed up water in the city of McGregor. If we take a look at the map, I'll speak as loud as possible here. If you take a look at your particular map that you have in your packets, there's a sewage treatment plant at the southwest corner of the city of McGregor. The city of McGregor is in the orange coloration. The drainage area is surrounded by the larger red area. And then if you look at the land coloration in the drainage area, the yellow represents state land, the green is county land, and of course the city of McGregor.
And so Highway 210 is where?
Highway 210 comes directly up from the south.
That's 65.
I'm sorry.
There's
210
right here.
Yeah, 210 goes to Duluth over here and heads to Aiken over here. 65 comes up from the south, so basically right now we're 120 miles north of it. Duluth is about 60 miles to the east of McGregor. Brainerd is about 60 miles to the west. And Grand Rapids, of course, is just up to the north a little bit. So basically that's the land ownership in the map. The ditch that has been the drainage ditch for the city of McGregor and for this ditch assessment area for 100 plus years is County Ditch Number 5. On your map, it starts, there's a line that's a little bit faint, but starts just at the south of McGregor, moves north to the east-west boundary of the city of McGregor, and then it travels to the east and angles up towards Rice Lake. The ditch then moves towards the north and eventually finds its way into the Sandy River. The Sandy River flows into Big Sandy Lake, chain of lakes, and then ultimately through the Libby Dam into the Mississippi River.
Let me point out one thing. Rice Lake is indicated there. If you flew over the lake in the summertime, you'd not see blue. It's a swamp, it's a bog, but the ditch runs through the middle of it.
There's an aerial photo. There's a second page in your map, similar to this here. The Rice Lake is circled on the map in your packet. It's actually a Class 3 wetland that's been misclassified as a DNR protected water. It is at this time classified as a DNR protected water, but the DNR does agree that it's a misclassification. The ditch, since the beginning of the ditch, has gone right through the center of the lake bed of the lake. And it's very slightly shown on these maps. It's a very faint line where the ditch has always been. So what we have is we're here before you today with regard to two issues. One is with regard to drainage. The fact that this lake has become overgrown, it's holding back a tremendous amount of water in the city of McGregor, about 4 foot elevation of water. That 4 foot differential, there should be really no differential if the ditch was operational. From this point on 210 to this point back here where it crosses under 65, there's about a 4 foot differential in water elevations. So the lake is holding back quite a bit of water, and that is in many regards good because it's absorbing a lot of phosphorus and a lot of things we don't want to introduce into the Sandy River chain or the Mississippi River that come from the McGregor sewage treatment plant in the southwest corner. Okay, so if I've explained the map, we were approached by the City of McGregor in 1999 to repair that ditch for drainage purposes. A series of meetings ensued to determine what the best course of action would be. The determination was to, instead of go through the center of the lake bed, to build an alternate ditch around the perimeter of the lake bed so as not to have to encroach upon this the lake bed or protected water. There was some rare species, a yellow rail, a type of bird that's in the area, so it was determined that some of that habitat was in this area and that a different alignment would be better. That was proposed in about the year 2000-2001. There was a EAW performed in 2002-2003 time frame, and it was determined that an EIS would not be required for this project. The permits were then applied for, and once the permits were applied for, we found that the MPCA was not willing to issue 401 certification, and based on that, the Army Corps of Engineers was unwilling to provide 404 certification. Now, the denial of certification was based on the fact that Big Sandy Lake is an impaired water because of phosphorus. It's listed by the MPCA as impaired water, and no phosphorus would be allowed to be released into the Sandy River chain and eventually make its way into an impaired lake. That's when Lauren stepped in, and where we're here today is we're here today to work to find an alternate scenario for the drainage of the effluent from the McGregor Treatment Facility away from County Ditch 5 in order that in the future that ditch could again be used for the drainage purposes it was originally intended for. The specific request is for funding to develop. There's a couple of alternative scenarios right now. There is an engineer that's been, the City of McGregor does have an engineer who's been hired out of Duluth, and he's looking at a couple of alternatives to improve the effluent coming out of that facility, whether it's improve the effluent, divert the effluent, or treat the effluent on a more localized site. That's what the specific funding request is for. This would be a funding request that would get us through an analysis stage, the design documentation stage, and then depending upon the actual outcome of the analysis, it may cover the cost of the project if the project is a diversion. It may not cover the cost completely if the project is something that's along the lines of a seepage cell in the area.
Additionally, as I understand it, this flowage down here is water, the type of water that would be released from the ponds and McGregor. The DNR is interested in having that water. So we have a possible good solution if the DNR is interested in taking the water as opposed to them not interested in releasing the water and getting it into a different cohesion and into a different type of situation where it would actually, from my understanding, improve the habitat of that particular lake for wildlife habitat. So they're interested in it. As you go farther south, there is the National Wildlife Refuge as well.
There's a very large wetland to the southwesterly direction here, and the DNR has indicated interest in having that water because it would improve their duck habitat, and the phosphorus would actually be good for creation of the habitat that ducks like. So there's a possibility of going in that direction, and again, the permitting process will be the ultimate determiner of which is the final solution. But at this point in time, the City of McGregor has about $138,000 annual budget. It's a very small town, a very modest means. The drainage area, in order to try to come up with even analysis type dollars for a town of that size would be, well, literally not doable. Their preferred method would be to ditch out the existing alignment, But from an MPCA perspective, an Army Corps of Engineers perspective, that's not a real doable project at the moment.
Mr. Chair, in a nutshell, I think that's the slightly requested.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, if we actually have and this is the first one I think I've heard in this committee other than my new proposal for a wastewater treatment plant. If we actually have a wastewater treatment system that wants to do something alternative that doesn't directly discharge into lakes, streams, or rivers, Mr. Chair, can I suggest we put a gold star next to that one so we can bring that one up in the future? Because this is what we should be doing, is looking at alternative options, looking at reuse, whether it is to infiltrate and refill wetland areas. There's a lot of good biological activity that can actually take care of any effluent that hasn't been fully treated. So this is a good deal, and it gets a Jungbauer Gold Star Award. Not that it means anything, but, you know.
It's got my gold star, too. It's got two. And five times, too. Three.
The Bipartisan Gold Star Award.
There you go.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, Scott Arneson, Aiken County Administrator. I'd just like to add a couple more things on how it directly relates to the state. Back in 1999, we could have just cleaned the ditch. And the DNR asked us not to just clean the ditch because they wanted in this area to put a scenic and natural life area, SNA designation area. And actually through the legislative process, that is designated as an SNA as soon as the ditch issue is resolved. And the ditch issue is not resolved, and until we can get a permit and do something different with the wastewater, it's not going to be. The other aspect of how the state relates, if you look at the assessment area, all of the yellow area is state, and we've got a track record of the state not necessarily paying all their ditch assessments. So there is a state involvement in this municipal issue.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, a clarification. Would that be designated an SNA or a wildlife management area?
I believe it's an SNA.
Okay, and will the county board approve the SNA designation?
I think it's in legislation already, as long as the ditch issue is taken care of. That's my understanding.
Mr. Fredrickson, I don't think you'd want to hunt in this area because you couldn't get through it.
Chairman, Representative Fulberg, I just wanted to hear that it was an SNA. It's the ongoing discussion we've been having in the Senate.
I understand that.
I've been in the Senator Fredrickson's Jeep. I think he could get through it.
Mr. Chairman, the DNR wildlife manager who's in charge of SNA designations in the Aiken County area is the individual who's interested in having the diversion to the southwest area. I would imagine he would have authority over both situations.
Any other questions in the committee? No.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much for any consideration.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair, committee members.
Look at this as possible inclusion. Senator Saxtog, do you have another issue here with, I think, Representative Lanning? Is that right?
I do. And we've been looking
EMDL issues
for Representative Lanning, but I think he would probably agree that we...
He's out of town. Okay.
And we have our resource people here, so I think we'll be in good shape. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bond request for $15 million is for Minnesota's Total Maximum Daily Load, or TMDL, as we call them, matching grant program. And with me today is Carrie Thurlow, who's going to go over the proposal, and I'm going to just turn it over to her. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Carrie Thurlow. I'm a lobbyist for the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. And the proposal before you in House File 2663 and Senate File 2447 addresses a portion of the impaired waters issue that you will likely hear quite a lot about this session. The portion that it deals with is the actual cleanup that will be asked of cities and wastewater facility managers to do once total maximum daily load plans, or TMDLs, are put in place. Our cities consider this a major economic development issue. Late last fall, the Minnesota Court of Appeals addressed an issue related to TMDLs that related to building of a new plant for the cities of Annandale, Maple Lake. And that decision stated that you cannot have new wastewater plants until a TMDL, if they discharge to, or affect and impaired water until a TMDL plan is done. Now, to put this in perspective, the federal law that requires the state to do TMDLs allows the state up to 13 years to do TMDLs. Now, we hope, and I'm not here to say that the PCA is going to take 13 years, but the federal law does require 13 years. Our cities want to have the ability to meet those mandates as soon as possible so we can lift the economic development moratorium once TMDLs are done. We know that in order for development to take place, they are going to have to meet the requirements in those TMDLs. And so we really view funding compliance as an important economic development tool. Last year, the legislature did establish this matching grant program that covers one half of the capital costs required by new TMDL mandates and provided a minimal level of funding. And this year, we are asking to put substantially more funding into the program, $15 million, to help our cities and communities meet the TMDLs that will likely be issued over the next biennium. Frankly speaking, this also helps cities provide relief of what would otherwise be considered an unfunded mandate. Others have proposed using existing loan programs to help cities meet these new mandates. The problem with loans is that they merely spread the cost of these mandates over time, but the city will still have to pay the entire cost of the mandate plus interest. This grant program that Senator Sackhag and Representative Lanning have carried provides real relief of unfunded mandates. It requires the city still to match the cost with 50% of a local match, but it does recognize a state-local partnership in cleaning up impaired waters. With that, my intent is to be brief and to answer any questions you may have, but I do want to point out that this, while I do represent the cities in greater Minnesota, this program is available for all cities across the state that will be asked to meet TMDL mandates as they are issued, and so we believe that this provides real relief to all cities in the state and also get on track to clean up our impaired waters. Thank you.
Will this help St. Cloud too, or being the got a new mayor up there that doesn't want to go with the league? you don't have to, you know. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does the federal government cough up anything for TMDLs at all?
Ms. Thurl.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, I guess I'm not aware of any federal funding, particularly to help with the meeting of these mandates. Nonetheless, it is a federal requirement that is being enforced through economic development moratorium, so we think that this is a high priority for us to address.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Gunther.
Besides having this be a good thing to have done, this should be deemed as an unfunded mandate by the federal government. Is that correct?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, I certainly consider it an unfunded mandate, yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is this an unfunded mandate by the state or by the federal government, or both? Because you got both of us being blamed for it here.
Mr.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the requirement that the state do TMDLs, or total maximum daily loads, to help clean up impaired waters is a requirement by the federal government through the Federal Clean Water Act. Now, those mandates, as a result, are developed by the state. I suppose the end requirement is from the federal government, but nonetheless, wherever the requirement comes, it ends up, without adequate funding through a grant program such as this, ends up being an unfunded mandate on our local units of government.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
One more question. Is this, who are these TMDLs affecting? Are they rural, suburban, urban, across the board? Is there one being affected more than the other?
Mr. Chair, Representative, TMDLs are required for any impaired water in the state. And my understanding is that just one impaired water, such as Lake Pepin, because of the way they determine what discharges impact that water, could impact up to 60% of the state. And so it's not simply a rural issue or a metro issue. Certainly there are communities that might be more immediately impacted than others. And quite honestly, it will impact everyone who uses or discharges or affects impaired waters of the state. And so this is a statewide issue.
Other comments?
Thank you, Senator Sagsog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just another way of saying that clean water costs money, and this is a good example of how we can help out in particular some of those communities that are strapped in rural Minnesota. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
I'm assuming this is going to be laid over.
We will have this for possible confusion, whatever. It'll be confusion, all right. No, but this
Thank
is
you.
A very important issue, and I know Senator Fredrickson has been working on this, and a lot of us, so, and the House, too, so it'll be in front of us. Senator Coring and others.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, committee, for hearing these two important bills. Being that Senator Sagsog and Senator Bach probably went before me, I don't think there's any money left, but we'll try to squeeze some out here for these important projects. Any specific order? I guess I would like to talk about the Garrison Cathy wastewater connection money, if I could, first, Mr. Chairman.
Fine.
What this is, and we've actually, the legislature has already given this project $1.5 million in 2003. It's a, I think it's approximately about a $17 million project. Our Native American friends put in a new wastewater treatment plant down close to the casino. And this project is to hook up the city of Garrison and everything else along the way, along the, I think it's about a 15-mile stretch, up to this new wastewater treatment plant. You know, we talk about, as you can see, the key word here is impaired waters. I think if we want to put our money where our mouth is, this is certainly where we want to do it when we take, you know, literally hundreds of individual septic systems offline and hook up to this wastewater treatment plant. So what we're just asking for is another $1 million to help this project along. Congressman Oberstar is very supportive of this project. There has been some federal money come forward, so we're just trying to continue to make this project a reality. So
and where is this at on the state level? Is it
what's that?
Where is this at on the state level? Where are we at with the with Terry Coleman and the company?
I don't quite understand.
With our ranking, do we have this?
You know, I don't know where we're at with the ranking, Mr. Chairman. If anybody knows, I'd certainly be glad to have them come forward.
Mr. Coleman? Garrison, can you tell us a little bit about Garrison?
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I was talking.
At least you weren't sleeping, that's the main thing.
Yeah, I have been kept awake. My name is Terry Coleman, I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority, for the record. City of Garrison, right now there's a multi-phase project. It's being funded by USDA Rural Development, PFA, Corps of Engineers. We have committed $4 million of WIF, I believe, catching me off guard without my list. And we've also committed to do a loan, largest loan, for whatever the other entities don't fund. I think from their perspective, to keep this project affordable, they'd like to see more, as much grant fund as possible. We're neutral on that, so that's our position.
Okay.
So, just so you know. But the project, phase one, phase two, already bid. Phase three and four are going to be bid real shortly. And, you know, we've committed to making sure the money's there.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Pullman? Representative Westerberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly here, what's the total cost then of the project? I mean, phase three and four, what's left to be done?
17 million.
Yeah, right around about 16.8, 16.9.
Mr. Chairman, would this receive the gold star from my good friend Senator Jungbauer?
It's just...
Hey!
We'll get him involved in it.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
And then
Senator Frederickson has a question.
Mr. Chairman, just, I guess almost kind of a technical question. In the last part of Subdivision 1, it says this grant is in addition to other grants or loans the project may receive. I'm assuming that if you got $1 million, that there would be $1 million less loan dollars going into this project. So essentially, it's really just an additional grant.
Senator Frederickson, that is correct. The current statute limits the amount of WIF funding, and they're at the max. So this would be over and above that.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to my good friend, Senator Corning. Would you be able to explain to us whether this infrastructure is zero infiltration infrastructure? Or that it might receive my gold star blessing?
Well, I believe it is, Mr. Chairman. As far as my knowledge is concerned.
Would our illustrious director there have any idea what they're using for infrastructure?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jungbauer. The part we're doing is just the collection system. The treatment plant has already been built in partnership with the tribe and the federal government. So the treatment plant is in place and operational. So this is just extending the sewer beyond the reservation property because there is no place to discharge. It is not being discharged any surface water. And that's why it was key to have the tribe build the treatment plant because the only place they could land apply the wastewater was on tribal land.
In terms of infrastructure, do you know what type of infrastructure they're using, piping?
As far as, I'm not sure because the state isn't permitting that and we haven't had a whole lot of involvement, but I assume it's a fairly sophisticated mechanical plant.
Okay.
With land application.
Thank you.
Otherwise, traditional collection system we're working with here.
Okay. And then, David, I got one more. And Mr. Chairman, and I also have another bill. It's on the City of Royalton's wastewater treatment plant. The City of Royalton is just a little over 800 people, and they've been told by the Pollution Control Agency that they need to put in another pond at the cost of $1.3 million. That is almost for the 800 people. It's just too much to put on the taxpayers there. They just can't afford that, and so I'm asking for $500,000 just to help them out. They're willing to go ahead and bond $800,000 on their own. But Senator Langseth and the committee was up there and did talk to him, and Senator Langseth said that we should. There certainly is warranted to do something here to help this small city out.
And Mr. Coleman, where's this project at in the list of 360?
Right up on the top, Mr. Chairman.
That's why I snuck some conversation in with PCA staff. Under the new priority system, it's going to have 24 points and rank about 120 range. And that we just don't have the funds to get down that far.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we need more revenue, and of course we're trying to work on that. A lot of problems, but it's just another issue, another small town that we have some difficulties with. Mr. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Coleman, maybe you could just enlighten me, and you might have said it in the last day or so, but I've sat through, I don't know, we're going on 14, 15 hours of what seems to be sewer treatment plants, so that we in this committee would never have to hear another one for a year or two. How much money would it take?
The whole bonding bill.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Coleman.
To be quite honest, we could and probably should be doing around $250 to $350 million dollars a year in wastewater upgrades. With the funds we're requesting and the funds we've had received in the past, we're probably looking in the neighborhood of $120 million. So we're doing.
And that's for biennium or for a year?
The funds we're requesting for the biennium will allow us to do that each year. So
we're not even halfway there to where we should be.
In my opinion, yes, but we're further along the way than we used to be.
You work for someone, and that person gave you a figure, and that's a good figure to use as far as you're concerned, right?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure that you had covered yourself there, but about somewhere between $300 and $350 million, what it would take per year, huh?
Yes, and I think, you know, on top of the traditional programs, I mean, if you get in, if this committee ever gets in discussion with Clean Water Legacy Bill, which Senator Fredrickson's carried in the Senate maybe a couple of years, and Representative Osmond in the House, I mean, that, about half of those funds that are being requested in that would go to the PFA to do the infrastructure stuff, and that would put a very serious dent in the backlog. So it's...
But at this rate, I could be here for at least another 10 or 15 days.
That's great.
You'll learn.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Fredrickson.
Could I add another caveat to the discussion? Even if we gave enough funds to Mr. Coleman's organization, the PFA, for loans and grants, there would still be many, many small rural Minnesota cities that could not afford those systems. And I think that's one of the reasons we see special bills like this. Even with the loans, even with the grants, you go into our small cities where you have elderly people living on Social Security, they can't afford the charge on their sewer and water bill.
Senator Fredrickson, maybe you might want to also understand that in the urban areas, many of my seniors yell at me over itemized. They must not have a whole lot to do other than look at that sewer bill, because they call me and scream an awful lot about what it costs for sewers and water in the metro area. This is not the first year that we've gone through this, and it seems kind of ludicrous to continue to put these systems out there that are polluting our water, holding up development, because we are a jobs committee in rural areas and in urban areas, and we're funding it at about 50% of where, not even 50% of where we should per year. Obviously, there's a lot of resources out there, but, you know, everyone says we don't have a revenue problem, we have a spending problem. Well, I guess maybe we should talk to those senior citizens in your district and in my district and kind of explain to them why their sewer bills are so high.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just make one final comment. Exactly why I brought this $500,000 forward. The city of Royalton has not even gotten their bond paid on the last pond, and now they're required to put in another pond for $1.3 million and 800 people to try to pay for that, along with trying to pay for the debt on the other pond. Is just they just can't do it. So it probably isn't high on the priority list, but it sure as hell is high on the priority list for Royalton, I'll tell you that. So, thank you.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you, Mr. Coleman. Representative Lilly? Is Representative Lilly here? Not yet. Okay, Senator Michelle. Fishbach. No, that's your first name. I changed it. And Representative Hosh. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hosh and Senator.
Thank you very much, Senator. We really appreciate the opportunity to be here and explain a little bit about the Richmond Sewer Project. And I think that the city administrator and the public works director are here with us, and I think they will probably do a much better job of describing what they need and what is going on with the Richmond Sewer Project.
Welcome to the committee, and Representative Hosh.
Representative Hosh wanted to talk.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I just want to thank you very much for your time. I could only imagine what 15 hours of listening to wastewater treatment plant requests is like. But this is extremely important to me and the community, and not only the community, but this is truly a regional project in significance, and we'll talk about that later. So, but I just want to hand it over to the true experts here today.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dan Coughlin. I am the city administrator for the city of Richmond. What you have been distributed is our handout, essentially asking the question that everybody should be asking, even myself, why should we care about the wastewater treatment plant in Richmond, especially as it's been testified to already. You've heard these same discussions of effluent and all these words that I didn't know about, you know, a year ago that now I'm a supposed expert on. It is, you know, we're just another little town that you don't know where it is on the map, but yet we've got a we've got some serious issues facing us. Basically, touching on, you know, it's also an honor to see that our public works director owns a suit. very briefly and to the point, you can read our handout, so I'm not going to insult your intelligence by going through it word for word, but essentially we've got our treatment plant sits on the Sauk River, just at the headwaters of the chain of lakes, which is a complex chain of lakes that run through part of Stearns County. It's actually been designated as one of the most complex water systems in the state. It's a plant that's 20 years overdue in its lifespan. The first memo on page 2 of the handout is a letter or a memo from the MPCA essentially saying that our plant's being held together with the spit, baler twine, and its own imagination. And hats off to our public works director. He's holding that thing together and keeping us in compliance with an awful lot of regulations that we need to abide by in order to protect our environment. And seeing that we are right on a very fragile ecosystem, this is a very significant issue for not just us in Richmond, but regionally. The back page of your handout actually has a little picture diagram of where Richmond is in contrast with the Sauk River and where it empties into the Mississippi. You know, as you may have noted in the papers in the last few days, with St. Cloud having an E. coli scare where everybody had to drink bottled water and boil their water for a day or two, if something went wrong with our treatment plant, about 20 to 30 hours after the fact, St. Cloud would have to shut off its water intake, and they'd be back to boiling water and bottled water again. So it's definitely has a regional impact on it. The economic impact of it is kind of twofold. One is a regional level. One of the memos that we have here, a record of conversation on page 3, simply states that in a conversation with the MPCA with our city engineer, said straight up they're not going to issue any more permits for us to hook up to our system because we're maxing things out based on what we're permitted for. So essentially, growth in our region has stopped. Whether it's businesses, whether it's single-family homes, we can't do anything until we have a new treatment plant. And then lastly, just to touch on, you know, it's got a regional significance, but it also has a very personal significance. And, you know, you've probably heard the same sob story from a lot of little towns. Ours, given the population of 1,300 and the cost of the project in excess of $8 million, the every household is facing a $6,000 assessment. In addition to that, just the debt reduction for this project, in addition to the $6,000 per household, is $97 per month. That's not paying for the sewer, you know, sewer connection or the use of the sewer. It's not including water bills. If you take the minimum hookup charges that that the city presently has, add to it the $97 of debt reduction, it will cost $111 per month per household in the city of Richmond before a single drop of water is used in the town. I just ran for sake of argument my water bill through this process. I've got three young children. We do an awful lot of laundry. That in a quarterly water bill would be in excess of $5,000 for my I want to be melodramatic, not that melodramatic. So $500 per quarter, or you know, it's $160 some odd dollars a month. You know, it's right now it's the bill that we face are kind of in the range of paying for cable TV. This would then move it into the, you know, challenging car payments for the number one payment other than the mortgage. And with the, we've got 40% of the folks in our town, like a lot of small outstate towns, that are at or below median family income. A lot of retirees, pensioners, widows, that are, if they're given this kind of a bill, it's going to be devastating. I mean, it's going to be devastating for everyone, but there's some that are just not going to be able to make ends meet. And so what we're asking for is a $4 million, just shy of $4 million, to help offset and blunt the major part of this impact. It's still going to be high. It's still going to be a significant amount of cost per resident. But it's going to take the unbearable edge off of this, is why we're asking for this allocation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Isn't this the one you said that you could literally put your finger through, your hand through this thing? Is that this kind of the way I remember
it? Yeah, that is.
And I'm surprised you aren't higher on the priority list than this. Did the MPCA look at this project? Re-rate it at all? Mr. Coleman, sir.
Mr. Chair, Terry Coleman, Executive Director of the Minnesota Public Facility Authority again. The PCA ranks them. We just kind of fund them in rank order. But in this case, looking at the new priority system and the information they had, they scored about 39 points. And there's a possibility of getting 10 more points depending on the permit. I mean, I think they're proposing a plant that would meet a certain permit requirement. If they agree to that permit standard, they would get increased 10 points. And don't ask me to explain why, but that's PCA's rules. So they'd be 49 points. And with running dual lifts this year to try to make that transition from the old priority list that's been in place for the last 15, 20 years and the new priority list, we're proposing to go down to like 60-point projects. In 2 years of the next mining cycle, we're hoping to be able to go down to like 40 points and do the projects above that. Mm-hmm. So I hope that answers your question. I think it's not that they're low priority. It's just, you know, this transition between running two priority lists and trying to allow the losers on that old priority list an opportunity to get done. We're not able to do them. And on the current priority list, they rank fairly low. So the new priority list helps them.
Good days are coming for.
Yeah.
Will this facility hold together till the list catches up with you?
That's a no.
Thank you for the hint. I am Brian Mayer, Public Works Director for the City of Richmond, just for the record. But yeah, your memory does serve you really well from last year. And the answer is, I don't know, but it could possibly be no. It's one of those facilities, it is 40 years old. It's just seen its useful life is come and gone. And all politics aside and funding issues aside, I don't know. If it creates an issue for the Sauk River, for the Chain of Lakes, it definitely becomes an issue for the city of St. Cloud. And we need to move ahead. I don't know. It's one of those things. You come down to the plant every day. This morning I came down and the meter was wrecked. I had called duty officer again. It's one of those things. You just don't know. Every day is different.
Okay. Senator Jungbar was first, I think, then Vickerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, well, I don't know who you asked the question to, but it's kind of interesting as you think about this scoring system and you read about and hear about what this plant is like. I'm really wondering and concerned, what does a plant that rates number one look like? I'm a little scared.
I think on the old point system, and maybe Terry can address that a little bit better, but on the old point system, we were ranked, I think we were at 115 points, if that serves me correct. I think what I find interesting is the top one had like 800 points, and I can't fathom how can a facility be eight times worse than we are.
Thank you. I think it would be of some importance to the committee to understand as we're, I don't know how the rest of the committee thinks, but now that we're hearing more and more about this point system, it'd be of great benefit to me to understand some of the bit of ranking so that when we put the bill together, we know what are we funding in terms of some of these numbers. So if you could do real quick, what a...
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Bill Dunn. I'm with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, the State Revolving Fund Coordinator. We've worked for the last 3 years to revise the criteria where we will prioritize older than 20-year systems, those systems that are in significant non-compliance, which due to the correct operation and the outstanding effort, this facility just isn't at that level of non-compliance. We also prioritize those facilities that are at or above capacity, such as Bird Island that we've heard about. And then lastly, unsewered communities that have a high rate of straight pipe discharge. Those are the facility types, project types, that float to the top. So in this case, they've scored in Richmond's case, and they may end up with a 49-point score once we determine the permit condition. But they just have done an excellent job of operating the facility, staying out of trouble, and that's reflected in the score. Now, during the rule promulgation, there were concerns brought up with regard to will people go into non-compliance in order to receive more points. We still do not believe that there's enough incentive to go into non-compliance, risk the penalties and the operating okay. conditions that would be enforced. And so right now we're feeling the scoring system, and we look at the rank. There have been a number of facilities that are in trouble that have moved up in the system.
So, Mr. Chair, what they're telling us is it's like if a teenager makes it home by curfew time, we're going to take the car away. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mr. Coleman.
Again, Terry Coleman. The reason 3 years ago the Public Facilities Authority asked PCA to revise their rules and actually paid for the staff costs to do it was because of cities like Richmond. We constantly got projects coming in that were literally minutes away from an environmental disaster if they weren't getting done, but since the good operation, they were meeting all their compliance, the body water they were discharging into wasn't of a particular class, you know, they're ranked real low. And we also had the problem of a lot of systems were at max capacity, and they're at the bottom of the list, and they had building moratoriums on. So. And then the whole issue of total daily maximum load, which, you know, impaired waters issue. So seeing all those things coming and the current priority list not really reflecting those, we went through that whole process. And I think Richmond moved up a lot, probably 50, 60, 70 points with the new system. They're getting close to what we intended the new rules to do. So it's improving their situation quite a bit. And hopefully we'll be able to deal with it or fund them in the near future because that was the intent of the whole rule revision. The old system, the old rules were like almost 20 years old in concept. They really didn't fit today's wastewater issues. So
thanks.
I hope that kind of broadly explained.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, I'm just having a little fun here today when I looked at the second item on the screen sheet and said the economy, I can help solve your problem. Leave my money alone in southern Minnesota. Don't expand Highway 23 and finish Highway 60. And we're all runners in this city. In a couple of years, we'll have to finish here.
But Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Highway 23 is done all the way up to Richmond. So we've already got it.
Senator Fredrickson and then Senator Pierce.
Mr. Chairman, I was curious, if the funding were available, how long would it be until you would be constructing a new facility?
Well, we're doing site prep right now. It's ready. We've gone through design. It's there. It's an immediate type of need.
Senator Pierce.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering how it could improve their rating, and I was thinking of two methods. A few handfuls of salt, you know, let it sit there for a long time and probably explode a pipe, or a gallon of vinegar or something. Even a quart of vinegar might do it for you. Maybe you could expand your rating in a hurry by doing that.
I think overall, I think the economic impact, I think it is an interesting endeavor. We've talked about that many times. Why? What's it all for? And then at the same time, you know, look at the economic impact of the chain of lakes and what it would mean. You know, how many people it would affect. You know, it's almost unconscionable to think that, you know, you got all these resorts down along the chain. They're not within the city. We can't really recover any of those costs from those people. And then you get the city of St. Cloud. We can't assess them either to help with their drinking water issues that they may or may not have. It's the only way we can economically get this benefit everybody is through this process here.
Representative Hosh. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to try to answer a couple questions that have been asked earlier, this project, if funded, would move forward immediately. They have the ground torn up right now and are doing site preparation. There's no time to wait. And I wish there were because of the change of the scoring system, but it simply hasn't met Richmond's needs. And the needs of the environment and of the community have had to come first. And I just want to commend Mr. Coleman and the PCA for trying to deal with a lot of different projects and a lot of different legitimate concerns. But I think we all know that two similar projects oftentimes can have different issues, even though they seem similar. And it cannot be put into a box simply by a scoring system. And I feel so strongly that this warrants funding. This was included in the 2004 House bonding bill. This was recommended for funding from the House. We know what happened in 2004. We're 2 years later. We've been patient, and we need to get it done now. And it's truly regional. You know, we discharge into the St. Cloud drinking supply, into the chain of lakes. It affects several communities throughout the entire area, and I greatly appreciate your time. I just can't stress it enough.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very
much. Look for possible inclusion into the bonding bill. Representative Favik, you want to go ahead with? Oh, we have. Okay, we have the author here. Okay. Representative Lilly and Senator. This is the one we've been looking for, right? Yes. Yeah. Come on.
I got a diesel comb in a minute.
Here. Yeah, well, that looks familiar. Yeah. Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and members of the Joint Committee. I'm Chuck Reeder. I represent North St. Paul and Maplewood Oakdale in the State Senate, and Representative Lilly will join me in the presentation shortly. We have a couple of handouts describing the Brimtrip Farm request. It's very basic. It seeks $150,000 from bond proceeds to complete the restoration of the Brunswick Farm in Maplewood. This would be matched at the local level. Maplewood, as you know, is adjacent to our capital city. It's nearly 50 years old. 100 years ago, settlers were coming in, but over those years, what we've seen is a total erosion of the farm, and there's one left, one that we're trying to save. And for those of you from rural Minnesota, I know you can appreciate it. Usually the cities, the suburbs are coming in for fancy projects. We're coming in to try to save this barn as a part of the farm for future generations, and through the efforts of our witnesses at the Historical Society, that you can help make their dreams come true. They've been selling candy, they're selling holiday buttons, and I'll pass out one. There's a lot of little fundraisers going around bit by bit to help raise those funds, but your help is needed in order to make this come together. And what they need is to be in compliance with the state code so that there's a sprinkler system in place for school events and other events. They're thinking of barn dances and things for the public to come in. But to be in compliance with the state code so they can open up this great historic facility on open space. There's still open space left in Maplewood. It's right by the mall. It hasn't been gobbled up. And these people, they're laying it on the line to try to preserve that for the future. So with that introduction about the Brunswick Farm, I'm going to turn over to Representative Lilly, and then you'll hear briefly from our witnesses.
Thank you. Representative Lilly. Welcome. Thank you very much for having us today, Mr. Chair and members, co-chairs. I'm not sure how that all works. Again, this is the Brunswick Farm. You can see the picture here on the floor. It's one of the ways that they raised money. There was an artist that did a picture of the farm. This hangs in my office. It's very close to where you're sitting right now. This is the last full set of farming buildings in the Ramsey County. I'll let the experts actually tell you more about it here. But it's pretty straightforward. It's the city of Maplewood's going to match the money, $150,000. And it's an amazing project with all the volunteerism that's gone into this, and they've just done a great job. If you go out on the site, it's neat being in the cities here, and it's like a step back in time, and you can really kind of go off the grid. They have a lot of community events, as you can imagine, Appleseed Days, Halloween parties, all sorts of, and of course Maplewood Historical Society has their meetings there. Maplewood's a great city, and you know, they don't really ask for much. They've got 3M, Maplewood Mall, a lot of big business, you know, and doing good things. But this is one thing that Maplewood's asking for, and we sure appreciate your help. We've got some testifiers here, a few of them members of the society, Carolyn Peterson here, and Buntrup, part of the farm family, and Shara Wozlik. We'll start with Shara. Her son is a former member of our house, and so she knows quite a bit about this place. And well, anyways, we'll start with her. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you. I'm president of the Maplewood Area Historical Society, and we are so fortunate to have this beautiful farm in an urban area, and we, as Leon said, we use it for many purposes, but there still needs to be a little more done to fulfill its full potential. And I would now like to introduce Bill Gruntrup, who knows more about the barn and what the barn needs than I do.
And thank you. And your name was, for the record?
Shar Wozlik.
Okay, all right. Thanks. Okay, welcome.
Thank you. Members, I would just like to explain a little bit. It was this whole thing started back in 1999. As veterans here know, we were here before. They were made it a part. The funding we got from the state enabled us, with matching funds and contributions from the family, whatever, to move the buildings. We've had a lot of volunteer help in through the building trades. Now, the Boy Scouts have been very involved. We've had, I think, four Eagle projects with various paintings and erecting fences and picnic tables and that type of thing. It's been a good companionship or a match with the scouts. We're trying to, you know, we've been working on this project with all volunteers for since 1999, and this is one of those things. There's a lot of educational programs that we have planned too, but a lot of these things can't transpire unless we meet the city codes, and fire safety is one of the big issues that they have. Not only the sprinkler system, but then we've got to make sure that the floors are tested for varying weights if we have things in there, and egress doors, and you know, all sorts of things like that. So, like I say, it's been an interesting project, and I've been involved ever since day one, and I still am. And we have a lot of other good volunteers, but we just, you know, we have limited ways to raise funds, and these are a little bit beyond our capabilities at this point. That's why we're asking for your help, I guess. And that, I'll introduce Carolyn Peterson.
Thank you. Ms. Peterson, welcome to the committee.
Yeah. This is a picture on a calendar that was put together pretty much featuring the big barn, which is 40 by 60 feet and has a gambrel roof. It's in very nice, nice shape. And I have two copies here of the Minnesota Preservationist, which gave our historical society an award for preserving the farm. And I'll send these around, but you can see the barn is being pulled by a large truck. And on this picture of it going down the street, the truck looks kind of like a toy out there. So I'm just going to send them around each way. Those of you who are connected with farms probably know that the barn is really the showcase of a farm. At least it used to be when I was young. Now there are some, you know, nice newer houses with them. But the barn is really special, and not using it really takes away, you know, from our farm. Now, this is a book that was published a year ago by Minnesota Historical Society about barns of Minnesota. And I want to show you that the Brinthrop Farm barn was featured at the beginning of one of the chapters. This is our farm in its new location. Although we arranged the buildings on their new site like they were on the original farm. So when you walk around or look around our farm, you're really looking pretty much at what we had over on White Bear Avenue. And I also wanted to say that we are located just south of the Highway 694 at White Bear Avenue. And so we're in a very accessible location for people all around the Twin Cities, so we can draw on a lot of people that we are hoping will come when we get the use of the entire farm.
Thank you. Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, I have one question. Who owns the barn and the property on which it sits?
Actually, the city of Maplewood, and it's leased back to the Historical Society.
Okay.
And that was actually done for insurance purposes, because the Historical Society just couldn't afford the premiums on the buildings. So.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, could you tell me specifically what the $150,000 will be used for?
Well, I don't have the breakdown right here, but sprinkler system, and then, like I say, the floors have to be reinforced for doing it. There's egress lighting, electrical, and because it's an unheated building, it'll have to be a dry system, so it also encompasses a pump station or a
Yes, an air compressor to put compressed air in the system and a heated area for that. So I don't. I'm sorry, but I don't have the breakdown there. Bathroom, yes, bathroom also. So. Yeah, and the handicapped accessibility. And I guess it's, you know, it's a number of issues. So
one. The system will be both up in the hay barn and down in the lower level of the barn.
Senator Black.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Wieger, I'm familiar with that area around 694 in White Bear, and I'm having a hard time figuring out why I haven't seen this building. Where a carpenter would see a big wooden barn. I'm trying to figure out exactly where it is so I can actually drive by and take a look.
Good on 694. You can see it right off of, as you cross White Bear Avenue, going east on 694. If you look to your right, you'll see a brick, big brick home and a red barn and some other buildings, and that's it right there. It's about less than a half a mile east of White Bear Avenue, between White Bear Avenue and McKnight.
County Road B, close to Perkins?
If you go down.
I
know
where breakfast is.
Senator Bach, you can come through my district and I'll take you out there. I know exactly where it is. I've been there a couple of times.
But it's not a big deal that I've had breakfast at Perkins, Mr. Chairman. I've had breakfast at most restaurants.
Yeah, we know your wife is worried about that, too.
Mr. Bach, Senator Bach, sorry. I'll gladly take you to breakfast and take you out there, sir.
Absolutely. I haven't seen it either, though.
You as well.
Everything is great.
All are welcome.
How about the whole committee?
Yeah.
Be careful now, Leon.
There's some mighty fine cooks here, by the way.
Might need a little more per diem, but we'll take care of you, Representative.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for your.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Are we done for today?
We're done for today. We're going to be back here at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Tomorrow morning. Okay, but that's the joint committee is
adjourned.
Is that more sewer work tomorrow?